It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 29th day of January, 2021. This is the final broadcast of January, 2021. More in Monday will bring us February. And again, let's see, we did the number 28, 29. Monday will be 59 days until spring. And it seems like, well, at least the last couple of days, it seemed like it may as well be 1,000 days till spring. Yeah, we got a low of like 14 tonight, and it's freaking cold. I've been back here most of the day because in the studio, that is, the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Hi, I'm Robin, and I managed to burn enough gas to get us up to a toasty 59 degrees up there where it's warm. Down here on the floor, not so much. And so I'm turning my heat buddy up to 11, and hope that we can just make it a little bit tolerable back here. Whew! Burr! But it's Friday on the front porch, and here in about 58 minutes or so, we will gather together in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves. At which around the extraordinary ordinary round table, I'm tired and addled. At which Sparky holds the seat of honor. Yeah, if you'd like to be part of all of that, just go to headon.live and click on the Skype link at the top of the page, and we'll see where we'll see where the conversation takes us. A little bit ago, I got done with an interview that's probably rolling right now. Don't tune away, please. You can watch the podcast. I did an interview with Nicole Sandler and had a lovely conversation with her. It's always fun talking to Nicole. And like I said, I've been back here in the studio for the better part of the day. And it's been frigid, but clouds cleared away, and it's actually quite pretty right now. It's sort of like what Darlene was talking about last night. I think sunset is officially 5:44 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for this neck of the woods today. The days are getting longer, and I like that. Yeah, I know. Robin, stop telling us how tired and addled you are. I understand. Yeah, okay, billable. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear that shit anyway, right? But every broadcast here at the Horn, yeah, that's exactly what I meant, Ralphs. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, let's go ahead and enjoy that. Here in just a second.
It's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board. 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10, You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah.
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Precisely. Thank you, Ralphs. That's wonderful. And so my heat buddy goes to 11, too. It's one warmer, isn't it? Yeah. So every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And consequently, we have thanks to send out to our 29th day of the month subscriber. And that means... thank you very kindly to Joseph. Thank you, Joseph. Thanks so very much indeed for being a partial sponsor of the program. And so here we are, one last chance to end January fully funded. $115 is the fundraising goal this evening. That would be wonderful if we could knock that out, or you know, hell, even a little. Yeah, who knows? Whatever, but. It's important to finish the month to the good. Let's see. What do we have this evening? Okay, so it's Friday on the front porch, and we'll get that conversation going, like I said, fairly soon. 999 says Brother Deacon Asa, which means that we are running hot, fast, and true in terms of packet passing and interneting and so forth. Subject line, enablers. Robin! The conversation last night with Darlene was classic. Just amazing. Last week, however, I tuned into Morning Joe, and I just decided this will be the last time I'll tune into that show, as I can't cope anymore with Joe and Mika's phony facade of pretending to be left-leaning only to then, in a passive-aggressive nature, entertain these right-wing hacks of who write their articles, editorials, and books taking cheap shots at the left. Last week, they had an author from Texas, whose name I can't remember, and that's just as well, because he was an idiot. This clown went on to inform us that Joe Biden was, not a fundamentally an honest president. Oh, that was, the clown from Texas. That was the same, that was the article, what was his freaking name? I can't remember, but he's an idiot. He's an idiot. And he's a highfalutin idiot at that. But that was the ape, witless ape rides helicopter. The clown went on to inform us that Joe Biden was not a fundamentally honest president. The guy was obviously a Republican, as he was trying to mitigate the sociopathic liar who just departed the White House. Any Republican who wants to come out now and speak about a dishonest Democrat is clearly trying to ameliorate Donald Trump, as this man told lies to the tune of a dozen a day. Well, here comes Jeffrey. He looks exhausted. Oh, dear God, all Trump's lies have just brought me to exhaustion. I just have to go lie down. Okay, good. I think we can get through the rest of the journal without Jeffrey interrupting. Everybody stay quiet now. If the truth be told, Biden has told some whoppers in his day, along with plagiarism to boot. Biden said he was arrested trying to see Mandela. Not true. Said he was tricked into voting for the Iraqi war when in 98 he supported an invasion of Iraq. Claimed he graduated in the top 10 in his law school class, but actually graduated 76th out of 85, and said he marched in Selma for civil rights, and he didn't. Some of that I'm familiar with. I'm not familiar with all of it. But Joe Biden had his moments over the last 40 years in politics, but he's not a sociopathic liar, nor does he suffer from delusions of grandeur. In my mind, Joe Biden can ask for and receive some redemption for his miscues, because for the most part, his lies are harmless. On the other hand, literally Donald Trump's lies and manipulative prevarications have gotten 500,000 people killed. This is the difference between Trump and Biden, in my mind. Trump is entitled to no redemption, considering the way he intentionally, fraudulently, and in a mendacious manner misled this country into believing the coronavirus was not a serious matter, not to mention his inciting a riot at the Capitol 3 weeks ago, which has caused six people their lives, and, 140 injured Capitol police. Well, the nap didn't last long. Jeffrey's up from his short nap for a bee slap. So, tell that idiot author from Texas to go stick a longhorn up his ass, because he's full of bull. Now, no offense to my Longhorn friends, because I love and long for them. Long live the Longhorns. Hook 'em, y'all. Austin is the most liberal place in Texas. Yeah, thank you, Jeffrey. And people like Mika, who sat there last week on the show and nearly read half a chapter of the idiot's book. It wasn't a book. It was an article, and she read the whole thing. What I call enablers. Mika sits there and acts like this innocent little field mouse as she reads this garbage and gives breath to this bullshit. Oh, here's Jeffrey. Mika, put down the mic. I had a friend text me today to tell me she does not like the haters on both sides. Well, sorry, because in the words of Mike Malloy, I hate these people. Joey's favorite line is, I hate people who hurt people. People say hate only hurts you. Well, as far as I'm concerned, hate motivates me and Joey to get even more civically involved and try to put an end to the Republican Party before the Republican Party puts an end to civilization. Thank you, Jeffrey. I hate to tell you, but Jeffrey's right. Jeffrey and I really don't hate Donald Trump as much as we hate the enablers of Donald Trump. I'm not a psychiatrist, and I'm not going to attempt to diagnose Donald Trump. However, his narcissistic nature, the delusions of grandeur, poor impulse control, and the constant need for adulation render him about the mentality of a three-year-old child. He's a seriously sick individual. I blame the enablers, such as Bill Barr, Mike Pence, and Sarah Miss Piggy Sanders, who've endlessly lied and covered for this man, full well knowing something Trump does not. These three people know the difference between the truth and a lie, and they knew exactly what they were doing when they enabled him. Pence deserved exactly what he got when he had the scare of his life a few weeks ago, and he deserves to have his political career completely finished for the way he willfully and wantonly gushed all over Trump instead of telling the truth. Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags did just the same for Trump as she obfuscated and deceitfully distorted the truth for Trump. She now wants to be governor of Arkansas. Go right ahead. I'm not worried about her, but rather Tom Cotton running for president. Jeffrey concludes, don't worry about Tom Cotton being the next president because the the African-American community will ultimately decide who the next president will be, and there ain't no way, wait for it. Oh, God, why do you do this? There ain't no way the blacks are going to pick Cotton. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday on the Front Porch, the 29th day of January, 2021, with Giraffrey monitoring the bullshit meter. And so, here we are. There's a $25 enabler challenge on the table, and courtesy of Matt in San Francisco, a $25 defeat the transphobic POS's challenge. Here, here, here. Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Joey and Giraffrey. That'll get us pretty well along the way to having everything knocked out. Thank you so much, Matt, and thank you, Joey and Giraffrey. Who's worse? Stephen, New York asks, Trump incited an insurrection and fomented an attempted coup. Game, set, match. Trump is. Not a big stretch for me either. That seems fairly obvious. Yeah. And speaking of elitists pretending to be regular folks, well, you may have seen shortly before airtime that the New York Stock Exchange and the S&P 500 took a bit of a bloodbath today. The New York Stock Exchange had the worst week since October. Among other things, Chevron lost $5.5 billion in 2020 as the pandemic took a toll on oil and gas. Yeah. But here's the part that kind of crawled on me as I read it. Headline, markets drop to end a volatile week dominated by meme stocks trading. And so we're back to that whole jump, you bastards thing. I had fun last night. I was sitting there thinking about, well, hedge fund managers and stuff. And suddenly I just needed to hear some rock and roll. So I ran over to YouTube and searched up Jump by Van Halen and cranked it up back here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Then I posted it on social media. Because, just reminded me how much I missed Eddie Van Halen. Still miss him. Gone too soon. And so, you'll get a giggle out of this. in my Facebook post, and it's there if you want to see it, I said, you know, those poor, poor hedge fund managers. And I had no sooner hit, I had no sooner hit post than Facebook asked me if I wanted to add a donate button, you know, for the poor, poor hedge fund managers. Oh God, I love the Zucker nerds, little algorithms, yeah. But anyway, as the New York Times writes, for weeks, as the stock market regularly climbed to records, investors wondered what it would take to snap Wall Street out of its blissful state. The resurgent pandemic certainly wasn't doing it. Even an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol wasn't alarming enough to end the rally. GameStop, though? GameStop. So today, the S&P 500 fell more than 1.9%, and capped a stretch of volatile trading that left the index down more than 3% for the week, its worst week since late October. And then this paragraph. Now, let's understand. I mean, I'm certainly no economist and no market genius, but it certainly feels like short selling is a bit of dirty business. It feels like it's probably downright market manipulation. And, well, I'm so old that I can remember, although we promptly forgot. I'm so old that I can remember all the airline stocks that got shorted just before September the 11th, 2001. And, well, who knows why something like that would happen, right? Right. Yeah. No. But anyway, the lovely little elitists at the New York Times wrote, and this article, let's give credit where credit's due. Wait a minute. We don't even get an author on this? No, I guess not. No reporter's name is on this, but see if you can hear what it was that pissed me off. The selling came as Wall Street was consumed by the antics of a group of day traders who have been bidding up a handful of stocks, notably the ailing video game retailer GameStop, and forcing losses on big hedge funds. It goes on, the traders appear to be mostly small investors who are focused only on a handful of stocks, but they've emerged as a new risk factor for large firms that had bet against those companies with what are known as short sales. Short sellers lose money when a company's shares rise, and the losses are potentially limitless. Boy, I tell you what, that's been repeated over to the losses are potentially limitless. You know what limits the losses on a short seller? Not being a short seller. Playing the game straight. But that's entirely too much to ask of the dirty little Wall Street casino, isn't it? Of course it is. But, okay, I'll give it away. The selling came as Wall Street was consumed by the antics of a group of day traders. Antics. See, if little people do it, if people who aren't hedge fund fucking billionaires, Muffy, do it, they're antics. But if dirtbag short sellers do it, well, then those are genius economic strategies for managing one's portfolio in a volatile market. Horseshit. Horseshit on their antics. I guess copy editors are in short supply at the New York Times, too? Yeah, maybe? Yeah. For pity's sakes, antics, as Steve in New York points out. Antics are things that the poors do to screw Wall Street. Market efficiency are things that the oligarchs do to screw the poors. Precisely. The magic word, antics. Because a bunch of people who look at some dirty business on Wall Street and decide to fuck back instead of laying there and being fucked, well, that's not clever. I mean, could we at least get an adjective? Because that is, I mean, that's at least clever. If they're antics, they're clever antics. But no, no, I guess not. But here's the explainer. For the rest of Wall Street, the worry is that the hedge funds will have to sell shares of other companies to cover their losses on GameStop and AMC, forced liquidation. That selling was a factor in the stock market's 2.6% drop on Wednesday, the S&P 500's worst daily decline in 3 months. Mark Haefele, the chief investment officer at UBS Global Wealth Management, wrote in a note to clients on Friday. So in other words, so many of these miserable, shit-eating hedge funds were playing fast and loose and dirty, and now they've been caught, and they may actually have to sell off some other shit, which will drive the prices down on other... Oh, dear me!
Well, Muffy, it appears that at least in the first quarter of fiscal 2021, we won't be able to get that 15th yacht.
Oh, I hate it for him. I do. It's so sad. So sad. And yet somehow not. Well, I tell you what, though. Those hedge funds that were operating pretty much without any rules at all, they sure want them some rules now. They like them some regulations. Steve pointing out the Antiquiers were to Wall Street what Lorena Bobbitt was to John Wayne Bobbitt. Please don't remind me of Lorena Bobblehead Boebert just yet. As Randy in PA puts it, praise the prophets and tell it like it is, Brother Robin, or sister, whatever. Yeah. Sibling! Absolutely. It's like I said last night, you know, the our betters love it when we spend $3 on a 1 in 290 million bet, but oh dear. Let's not be playing where they play, and by all means, let's not play by their rules and subject them to the same sort of abuses to which they subject us. Oh, hell no. And let's see. Oh, I had a note from Kyle to get the program going. Not to be a little ray of fucking sunshine, but how are we supposed to move a country forward even when 60+% of the people agree with our side on pretty much every issue? When many of the voters and electeds on the other side are literal terrorists trying to get people on our side killed or do it themselves, how do we get past that? Fascinating question, really. And it's all power politics, Kyle. Organize, 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 organize. And as you get closer to crisis moments, mobilize, 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 mobilize. That's the only hope. You know, that plus the passage of time. Any country is going to have a certain percentage of stupid people, not just us. But the hope is that time goes by, the stupids will maybe, die off and leave the intelligent behind. That's why our side is doing things like taking double masking seriously. Yes. That's why we're washing our hands. That's why we're not touching our faces. That's why we're wearing our gloves. And not to encourage any panic buying or anything, but one gets the idea that if you have not yet obtained a box or two of nitrile gloves, this would be a good time. Because... I have a feeling they're going to be in precious short supply in fairly short order. As to hedge funds, Lee in New York says, they love the gambling until they lost on their bets. That's the way it goes, son. Oh, red, no, black, no, put it on the green. Oh, shit, it's red. You lose. And all that business about how they didn't like regulations before and now they do. Well, there was a story that I wanted to get to yesterday and I did not get to it. And I'm sorry about that, but I'm glad that we had it for today because it's a counterpoint to the idea of a minimally regulated Wall Street where their insistence upon being able to play fast and loose and engage in skeevy things like short selling. Well, anytime you deregulate, human lives are going to be put on the line. And yesterday there was a disaster, truly a disaster, in Hall County, Georgia. The goddess of irony never sleeps. And so as I read Gainesville and Hall County, Georgia, I was reminded that it was Hall County, Georgia, where the Republicans did their dead level best to keep people from voting so that they could try to save the miserable, filthy orange hide of Nitwit Nero. There are few industries in this country that are uglier than the meat industry. And I say this as a meat eater, okay? Facts are facts. Haven't gotten to veganism yet, but well, I'm convinced that the actual people who promote meat are trying really hard to get me there. And in the meat industry, I mean, there's things like contained animal feed operations, CAFOs, horrible, horrible nightmares. And they're bad enough, and God knows the hog farms with their vast lakes of urine and feces and the pig placenta. And, man, going rough on dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, aren't I? That's nasty. But of all the nasty out there, probably the chicken business is the nastiest. And so, in Gainesville, Georgia, or thereabouts, it is in Gainesville, the Foundation Food Group plant. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, or thereabouts, when the fire department got a call about burns at the Foundation Food Group plant. And when the fire department got there, they found a whole bunch of people who had evacuated the plant. And five people were already dead. Another one would die at the hospital. And multiple victims were experiencing medical emergencies around the facility. The five who died were found dead inside the plant. The sixth one was taken to the hospital and passed away there. According to the Mexican government, at least two of those who were killed were Mexican citizens, because the meat industry, you know, the chicken that's on your plate, the pork, the beef, probably the vast majority of it is produced by immigrants, documented and un. And because so many workers in meat plants are undocumented, that allows the management to skirt the rules, because who's going to complain, right? So there are six dead. There are three people in critical condition, as of the last story I saw. And five people were in fair condition, including a firefighter. Well, whatever possibly could have caused this? Well, a Mr. Nicholas Ancrum, who is the vice president for human resources at Foundation Food Group, said, "Preliminary indications are that a nitrogen line ruptured inside the facility. Those lost include maintenance, supervisory, and management team members. Every team member is equally important to us," he said, trying not to snicker. "And our hearts go out to their families and communities who have suffered such devastating loss. But don't expect that to extend to our lawyers, who will contend against and oppose every workers' compensation claim that's going to be filed out of this god-awful bit of business. And I call it god-awful because I have a feeling it'll probably affect our share price. Oh, goodness, maybe some asshole in some hedge fund is planning on shorting Foundation Food Group, which used to be called Prime Pack Foods. But this month it was taken over by Foundation Food Group, and they're a poultry company that's headquartered in Gainesville, Georgia. They're at the plant where the nitrogen line got loose. It wasn't a chicken killing or processing plant. It wasn't a pluckery. No, instead at Foundation Foods Group, they transform chicken into chicken fingers, chicken nuggets, you know, chicken product food-like substances. And so what apparently happened is that the liquid nitrogen evaporated and the nitrogen gas expanded rapidly and displaced the breathable air, and the workers were asphyxiated. And they rely heavily on pressurized liquid nitrogen in poultry and meat plants. And here's the thing. This is, of course, Georgia, and the reason these plants are in southern Confederate states is down there they don't believe in regulations. Now, we can't be having no regulations and no poultry processing plants, yeah? Because them's job-killing regulations. Well, it turns out they might have been life-saving regulations, but, well, you know, I mean, it's not like they ain't going to be replaced by some New Mexicans. I feel like a real shithead talking like that. Obviously, it's not how I feel. But it is the everyday reality of the modern economic miracle that is American-style anarcho-capitalism. And the plant there that was recently taken over by Foundation Foods, yeah, they've been having some problems. They got fined over $100,000 back in 2015 for some dozen or so safety violations. The next year saw them fined $40,000 for more violations. Yet workers have had things happen to them like losing a couple of fingers when a hand got caught that was still attached to a human being, got caught in some machinery that was being cleaned. Another worker there at the chicken finger factory lost four fingers himself when it got stuck in a food mixer. And in 2019, there were $3,750 more in fines. And this is the part of the story where I mention, naturally, southern states hate regulations. And the only thing they hate more than regulations is a goddamn union. The day of the union is past. We don't need no unions no more. There was abuses once upon a time, but the day of the union, well, it ain't necessary no more because these ain't them kind of days. Tell that to the tell that to the six-fingered man. Because southern states like Georgia will bust ass to keep from ever having unions in the workplace. Stuart Applebaum is the president of the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union. They have more than 15,000 poultry workers across the southern United States, but not here. Had simple safety protocols been followed, workers' lives wouldn't have been on the line, Stuart Applebaum said. The egregious lack of standards at non-union facilities like the one in Gainesville cost essential workers their lives today. And this goes back to the question asked earlier. How do we, that Kyle asked, how do we get past these assholes? And Stephen New York answered the question, we don't. We just do everything we can to make sure they don't get power or to take power from them. Imagine if everyone in Georgia who was disgusted at the idea of people dying in a crummy wage job in a crummy factory that cranks out chicken fingers and nuggets and strips. And I know, Steve. Wait, chicken nuggets have chicken in it? I know. But imagine if everybody got angry about that. Imagine if it wasn't just the people who were harmed. Imagine if we could gin up a little bit of basic human sympathy, if not empathy, and vote that way. See how? Yeah. But, well, that's the job before us all over the country. You want to make people's lives better? Make it easier for them to join unions. Plain and simple. And that applies whether it's a coal mine or a chicken finger factory or a frack pad. It's kind of universal. It's another one of those moments where you think about opportunities lost. You know, when the chickens came home to roost early in 2008 and tanked the economy. Hey, look, Wall Street did that one to us, too. Well, I tell you what, there's some folks, aren't they? One of the things that was part of the early agenda of the first Obama administration was something called the Employee Free Choice Act. It easily passed the House, Nancy Pelosi doing her damn job again. And then it went and quietly had a pillow put over it and was suffocated to death by the United States Senate. Because back then in 2009, you had people like Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, who said, an economic downturn is no time to be thinking about making workers' lives better. And so, bye-bye, Employee Free Choice Act. And how many lives could have been saved from that day to this had that bill only passed? Yeah. So, just another day in Merca. Regulations bad on Wall Street until Wall Street wants regulations. And I'm sure since they are able to write some pretty whopping humongous checks for campaign contributions, they'll probably get some kind of regulation out of it to protect the poor, poor hedge funders and short sellers. I wonder how many hearings, and I'd like to think there will be some in both houses. I think we probably need a hearing on workplace safety as much and the effect of a lack of regulation on workplace safety as we need hearings on skeevy short sellers. What do you think? Could that be good? One hopes. Yeah, Steve in New York says we need to unlearn our learned helplessness. There's a whole bunch in that statement. when we figure out that we can that we don't have to sit there and be fucked and can fuck back. And that's basically what happened with the Reddit short with the Reddit investors. And how is it that America would benefit by having GameStop go away? They're not great jobs, but they're jobs. And GameStop has a way of even being in little towns like Beckley and Fayetteville. I'm pretty sure there's not an office of the Dewey Cheatham and Howe hedge fund in either of those places or most of small town America. Yeah. By the way, we've got a good gang in the Horn chat room this evening. Pop on by if you'd like. You'll be welcomed by the likes of Anatole and Lou and Roger in Oregon and Stockton Larry and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, because he is a third stage guild navigator, has indeed folded space today to become Man Cave. He's capably assisted by Pinch It, midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Oh, and speaking of which, this isn't too terribly far, at least it says it's not. This isn't too terribly far from where Steve is. By now, you're probably all familiar, or most of you are familiar, with a guy who refers to himself with the wonderful moniker, the Buttercream Dream, Corey the Buttercream Dream Forester. And I presume he's telling the truth. I mean, he's funny when he wants to. He can be very funny when he wants to be. But he put up a video on Twitter saying, I'm from Marjorie Taylor Greene's, and that's Marjorie Taylor Greene cue ball, her district, and I have something to say. Let's share that, shall we?
My name is Corey Ryan Forster. I'm from Marjorie Greene Taylor's district here in Walker County, Georgia, and I think it's important that people hear what I have to say. I'm gonna try not to scream. I'm gonna try not to yell. I'm gonna try not to say things like, Marjorie Greene Taylor's the biggest fucking piece of shit I've ever seen! I'm gonna try really hard. Because again, I don't want this to fall on deaf ears. But we're not all like that. And I don't want to sound like a not all white people thing, because we definitely need to take accountability. We definitely have earned a lot of it. But I'm so fucking sick and tired of having to constantly defend my accent. And I'm not asking everyone out there to stop thinking of my people of a certain way. I'm talking to my people right now. Vote this fucking bitch out! God! Aren't you ashamed? How are you not ashamed? It's one thing to like guns. It's a completely other thing to be fine with someone who harasses school shooting victims and talks about how it's fake. This is so asinine. QAnon has become synonymous with Walker County, Georgia, and I'm fucking tired of it. I've grown up here my whole life, and I was led to believe that there are decent people, and I still believe that. But until I start seeing a majority scream at this lady and talk about how she doesn't represent us, I don't believe it. And I'm so tired of it, man. I know I'm not the only one. I'm so fucking sick of people in the comment section saying, oh, you're a good one. You're one of the good ones, Corey. Do you know how fucking embarrassing that is? I'm talking to those of you who feel the same way as me but aren't saying anything because
hold on a minute, because that was the part that grabbed me. The, oh, you're one of the good ones. Because, see, that is that's a nasty little line that's been used for eons in relation to the African American community. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Corey's
knew exactly what he was saying there. Because stings, doesn't it? Yeah. You're one of the... Because I get that, too. Not trying to... what was the term AOC used? Clout follow or whatever. But because I'm in West Virginia and because I am unabashed in my progressivism, my liberalism, I get that question a bit, too. Well, you know, you're one of the good hillbillies. You're not one of those stupid people that 70% of the electorate that voted in West Virginia, of which voted for Trump and so forth. Yeah. And it's because that other 70%, make no mistake about it. Whatever good traits they may have in their lives, there is an aspect about them that makes them bad. And it's not simply a political disagreement where all blue is good, all red is bad. No, no, no. I don't like Liz Cheney at all. She's a harsh, hateful, abrasive human being. But she also, when the time came, loved her country more than she felt obedience to Donald Trump. And that is as rare as hen's teeth in the GOP. No, it's... If you don't want to be evil, don't do evil. It really is as simple as that. And our choices at the ballot box are not simple political choices or popularity contests. They are expressions of our moral core. So I know exactly what Corey's talking about here.
Pretty scream at this lady and talk about how she doesn't represent us. I don't believe it. And I'm so tired of it, man. I know I'm not the only one. I'm so fucking sick of people in the comment section saying, oh, you're a good one. You're one of the good ones, Corey. Do you know how fucking embarrassing that is? I'm talking to those of you who feel the same way as me but aren't saying anything because you don't want to upset your mom and dad. You don't want to upset your papaw. You don't want to upset your friends. Maybe you don't want to get fired from your job. Now it's time to use that fucking white privilege, baby. We've got it in spades. I'll say whatever the fuck I want. Fuck her, fuck QAnon, fuck the radical right, fuck all them. Well, I'm in a goddamn blue state now, and it's time we started fucking acting like it. Fuck her! It ain't all of us, goddammit!
Like I said, I understand every blessed emotion he manifested. But here's kind of a wake-up call. Georgia is not a blue state now. Just because you got one Democratic senator for 6 years and another Democratic senator for two does not a blue state make. Hell, if that's the case, then I'm at least, West Virginia's at least vaguely purple because Joe Manchin's a goddamn Democrat, right? If Georgia wants to be a truly blue state, and bless every human being's heart who busted their ass to go to the polls to give us the Senate. America owes a debt of gratitude to the long-suffering voters of Georgia who did that. But the fact of the matter is, you still have, in Georgia, for instance, a blood-red, maggot-to-the-core legislature. How maggot? Well, we saw what happened in the January 5th runoff election, didn't we? And we saw what happened on November the 3rd. Well, a new bill has been introduced in the Georgia legislature that says if you want to vote absentee, or if you want to vote early, but in particular absentee, in Georgia, if you want to vote absentee, you have to present a photo ID
to request an absentee ballot, and then you have to present a photo ID again to cast it. Because, see, it wasn't difficult enough this time through. No matter how hard people like, well, Brad Raffensperger, who has been hailed as some sort of freaking hero because he actually, you know, just did his damn job instead of violating his oath to the Constitution to try to dummy up the election for Nitwit Nero. Or God knows, Brian Kemp, whose skullduggery stole the gubernatorial election in 2018 from Stacey Abrams, which he accomplished in his role as Secretary of State of Georgia. Ay, ay, ay. That legislature has to be removed. And the fact of the matter is, if we really want to make progress, we have to make it at the legislature level, because that's one of those, that's part of that learned helplessness that Steve was talking about a few minutes ago. You know, we sat back and played starfucker politics about presidents while various and sundry nefarious outfits like the Koch brothers were pouring horse-gagging amounts of money into taking various state legislatures. And among other things, and I go back to Matt's challenge to begin the program, his defeat the transphobic POS's challenge this evening. The only way to stop seeing those hateful fucking bills is to make sure that the people who introduce them are either replaced at the polls or that their party is reduced to minority status so that they can introduce those hateful bills till hell freezes over, but they never see the light of day be outside of committee. Work to be done. Eyes on the prize, right? Corey, the Buttercream Dream, tours with Trey Crowder. And they're both extremely good at what they do. And thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs jumped in on the first challenge from Joey and Giraffe. Much appreciated, Ralphs. That means there is $15 to go on the Enabler Challenge, and then we'll get started on the Get Rid of the Transphobic POS's Challenge. And I hope it would be great. You know, we're almost an hour into the program. It would be great if we could go ahead and knock those out and then finish the rest of the fundraising and be good for the end of January and start February without a deficit. It would be fantastic. Steve in New York says, you're not going to believe this, and we can speak on the porch if I can get there. I actually don't have a problem with hedge funds. I have a problem with people and organizations who want special treatment and want dog-eat-dog from other people and not for them. Sure. I'm not crazy about hedge funds because they operate in semi-darkness. For instance, when we celebrate things like, say, a teacher's pension system saying we will no longer invest in oil stocks, and then they divest, well, guess who snaps up those oil stocks most of the time? Hedge funds. And that leads to even less transparency and even less accountability than there was in the first place. So, you know, that. Let's see here. Brother Deacon Asa says, not to be a Wall Street apologist here, but just to be clear, two hedge funds already went bankrupt over this to the tune of $23 billion. So, too, any retail investor can short assets. It's not exclusive to the hedge funds. No, but the hedge funds do it on a much more massive scale. That means that there's greater harm. Meanwhile, Les says, holding the games will stop, holding the line against the swine, hashtag. What can be said about it? These are a group of self-important, entitled motherfuckers, and I love to see a motherfucker suffer. They always win, and when they don't, they get a lifeboat from the very people they fuck over and leave homeless. Re-2008 mortgage-backed derivatives. Reading my daily Reddits while watching clips of billionaire hedgehogs cry rivers on CNBC about the poor sticking it in sideways has been my joy this week. Into the smoker, you pigs! And I'm not wasting good hickory on you. The pine will do y'all just fine. I'm spoken like a true barbecue aficionado. Thanks, Les. Todd says, good for Mr. Walker County. For how many people does Mr. Walker County speak? How long do you think it'll be before he's labeled an N-lover? Oh, I'm sure he already has been. He's out there on the road doing his bits, doing his comedy, his commentary, and I'm sure he is thoroughly hated. I forget which recording it comes from, but the late, great Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, the prophet, did a bit where he talked about having a club date in Alabama. And after the show, somebody came up to him and said, "Hey, we don't like how you talk about Jesus." And because he was a genius, Bill Hicks said, so I looked at him and I said, "Really? Okay. Then do like Jesus and forgive me." Kind of hard to come up with an answer for that one, especially on the fly. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure Corey's not well-loved. Arthur points out, also, there are hedge funds, and then there are hedge funds. Yeah, if you want to play a risky game, expect to have risky losses. Frankly, I think that to the extent that a hedge fund manager owes a fiduciary duty to clients, they should probably get the bejesus sued out of them for having, you know, on top of any bankruptcies. Fuck that. Go after their personal wealth. Because a rational and prudent trader maybe would have traded on the up and up instead of trying to game the system. But I'm crazy that way, right? Yeah. Of course I am. And Matt in San Francisco adds, get ready to fight. The Georgia thing is just the start. A right-wing talking point that hasn't received too much play is the restore people's confidence in our elections. Yeah, that's a real dandy. I've seen that a couple of places. They're crafty, Matt observes. First, hammer home a lie that the elections are not secure. Then after they lose, they squawk about people not having confidence in the election. And next, they introduce bills to suppress the vote under the auspices of protecting the elections. They are an endlessly evil lot, says Matt, and I could not agree more. And there, well, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof, right? Yeah. And then there's Cori Bush. Different Cori altogether. Oh, and one of the good ones, Steve in New York, says, I get that as a gay man. Sure you do. Sure. But Cori Bush, like Marjorie Taylor Greene Cubal, is a freshman in Congress. And she's from Missouri. You know, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert from Colorado, also a freshman in Congress. But Cori Bush is a decent human being as compared to Lauren Bobblehead Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene Cuball. And Cori Bush is moving. She got her office assignment there in one of the House office buildings. Yeah. And it just happened to be that she's neighbors. Yeah, she's neighbors with Marjorie Taylor Greene Cuball or Cucumber. And it turns out that Cori Bush has a new office by direct order of the Speaker of the House, namely Nancy Pelosi. Because Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene Cuball and her staff berated Cori Bush in a hallway and targeted Bush and others on social media. And, of course, there were no masks. Cori Bush tweeted that she's moving her office away from Greene's for my team's safety. The question, of course, that Flavio asked is, why does she have to move? Why don't they move Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber? Well, it becomes a matter of, what, you're going to move Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber to some other person? I'd rather get an office upgrade, and I'll bet you Cori Bush is getting an office upgrade. If you've ever spent any time in the House and Senate office buildings, some assignments are better than others. I would decidedly not want to be in the Rayburn House office building. It's a hot mess of design, and it's, on the other hand, the Cannon House office building is beautiful and ornate and Greco-Roman and all of that stuff. I mean, frankly, I'd leave Marjorie Taylor Greene Cuball right where she is until they can expel her from the House. And then nobody will have to worry about being her damn neighbor. How about that? Shall we? I like that. So, we'll see how it plays out. Oh, and over the last couple of days, we've talked about the potential for a conversation between Kevin McCarthy and Marjorie Taylor Greene Cuball. Yeah, don't hold your breath. As to Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber, Steve in New York says they should just move her down to Storage Room B. She can take the red swing line. Yeah, see? Steve's worked in those buildings. He knows. He knows. Well, we are into the second hour of the program now. It is the dinner hour in the Central Standard Time Zone. Let's pop over and see what's going on with Sparky in the man cave. What do you know, Sparky?
How is sound?
You sound good. It's pretty noisy behind you.
Okay, let me unplug the jet engine.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that thing taken off spontaneously.
Well, I've been out here doing some chores, as I like to call them. My neighbor gave me a bunch of wood from a door factory, from pallets or something else. And I'm making kindling out of it.
Oh, nice! You know, you can do a lot with those transport pallets. I've seen like kitchen islands kitchen floors. And, you know, you get them in there and you sand them and everything. It makes them actually pretty, it makes them pretty stuff.
Well, this isn't exactly pallet wood. It's kind of, how they pack windows or something. I don't know. They got a notch. They're like a 2x2, but they got a notch in one side of them.
Oh, okay.
She had them all bundled up. They were shrink wrapped in plastic, and she left them on my porch last night. In between the rainstorms, I guess.
So, where do you have the wood burning stove?
In the living room. I have a fireplace insert.
Oh, cool! Those are nice.
That my dad built right behind me here in the man cave, like 50 years ago.
Wow.
Because when we first moved into the house, we had it was just regular fireplace with glass doors. So he took that out and he built this huge hunk of steel, and it's got fire brick in it. I probably put the fire brick in it after he moved it. I don't know how he got in the house and got it in the fireplace. But he is pretty engineering and doing stuff like that, being a construction worker. So, and it's in there, and it's held up all this time, and it's got a blower on it. It's got a tube that goes into the side of the insert, sticks out from the fireplace, and it's got a tube that goes into the insert, blows cold air out of another room. Well, it's absolutely it sucks air out of the kitchen. It's behind a wall there, and we had to drill a hole through the wall and put the blower on the other side. But anyway, it blows air around this inner chamber that's in there, and it's got fins on it, and on the top of the inner metal fins that were welded on there stick up in the air chamber, so they dissipate heat, and the air blows through there, and then there's like on the top of the insert, there's two slats where the heat blows out of.
Must keep things nice and toasty.
Oh, I can get that room up to 80 degrees on a night, and then you can go in the rest of the house, and it'll be just nice. It'll be warm in there. But sometimes it makes it hard to watch TV if you get it that hot.
Yeah, it can get a little close. That's the way it is with our kerosene heater. We heat in the front room, and the rest of the house gets nice, and the front room turns into a freaking sauna. Without the fun steam and all of that stuff.
But that's where my big flat screen TV that I watch football and other things on.
Well,
but it's nice to be out in the man cave again.
Oh, it's got to be. Yeah, I know you don't like folding. I know you don't like not folding space.
You picked up on that, did you?
Well, since I was talking Georgia there for a minute, Steve, are you around?
Blobbin, what's up, man?
I don't know, it's Steve. How about you?
Same old, same old. Yeah, that district from Georgia, that's Rome, Calhoun, Dalton. It's up in the northwest, and it's so close to Alabama, it might as well be Alabama.
They certainly vote like it.
Yeah. So just to give everyone a demographic to wrap their head around. In fact, that's where my wife's parents are from, and she hasn't spoken to them in over 12 years because they're just so whacked when it comes to politics. And it happened one magic Thanksgiving, and that's a tale for another day.
One magic Thanksgiving? Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's a tale I want to hear.
I will tell it one day. It's a cliffhanger. Tune back soon.
Indeed, indeed. So, realistic, how many Corys do you think there are in that district? Because it was going to go Republican, even before that one, I think he was a doctor or something, bailed out and just handed her the job.
Right. But she primaried some other guy that wasn't, he was a whack job, but he wasn't nearly as whacked as she is. And she ended up primarying him. And then the other guy just bailed. He's like, fuck it, there's no chance of me. Why am I, what am I doing? And right. So he just handed it to her, you know. So I would say, you know, and of course this is me spitballing, 20 to 30% of that district has some sense.
And that and the voting, the vote totals probably look exactly like that, don't they?
Yep. Yep, exactly. And that guy who was ranting, gosh, can we feel his pain? Robin, I can feel it, can't you? I mean, from being in the South for so long.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Poor guy. It's frustrating. It's frustrating as hell, man.
Oh, it's. I mean, but the same thing happens to, I mean, but it's part of his shtick, too. You know, being a liberal redneck like Trey Crowder. But I mean, I get it. Wait, you're from West Virginia? What? Why aren't you a maggot? Or the people who find out you're from West Virginia and just assume you are a maggot.
Yep.
And that's a real fun one when you go, oh no, I despise that son of a bitch.
Brother Todd just shot me a text. He wants to know we're on the horn. I'm going to encourage him to come on in.
Yeah, jump in, Todd.
He comes in on the stress line, doesn't he?
He can come in any way he wants to. If he wants to come in on the stress line, that's groovy by me.
Perfect. I tell him, come on in. The water's fine. So what else we got going in here?
Skype line the last time. I thought Todd used the Skype line the last time.
Well, he did. He did. And then I was a rude idiot and forgot he was, and didn't call him into the conversation. And he's too much of a gentleman to just bail right in. Oh, and thank you to Jenny in Wisconsin. We are done with the Enablers Challenge, and we are $10 into the defeat the PO the POS Transphobes Challenge. So that's awesome. We've got $15 to go on that, and then we'll try to finish out the week and the month. Thank you, Jenny, and thank you, Ralphs. That's very it's really really helpful. Well, I'm looking at my Twitter feed. Apparently, there's a very nice response to the conversation I had with Nicole today. People have already enjoyed it and will probably continue so to do. That's nice. That's wonderful. Oh, okay. Hey, Roger, go, man. You've got the answers to my vinegar brine questions.
Well, I got a question for you first. Are you talking about the fermented brine or a commercial pepperoncini brine?
Yeah, I'm thinking more commercial. I would just like to replace the brine that I keep drinking.
Okay. Mixed vinegar, you know, 5% vinegar, 50-50 with water. Grab a couple of pepperoncinis, put it all in a blender, grind it up, and throw it in the back of the fridge for a few days for the flavors from the ground up pepperoncinis to blend with your new vinegar. And you might want to put a little bit of salt in, like a 1 or 2% salt solution with
make
50-50, half and half, and then make that about a 2% brine, and then grab some of the pepperoncinis, blend it up, and put it in the fridge and let it sit for a few days, and the pepperoncinis ground up will sink to the bottom, and you'll have the flavored brine from the commercial pepperoncinis.
Well, do you like heat it to a boil or anything first?
Yeah, you can heat it to a boil if you want to, but generally speaking, when you make your 50-50 pickles, you do heat it up. Part of the heating up thing is frequently you've got a sachet of pickling spices and other things in it, and you could do that and give it some flavors. I mean, pickling spices can be damn near anything. You can actually buy a jar of pickling spices. I tend not to use them.
It's mustard and crushed it's mustard seed, crushed bay leaves, some black peppercorns, some allspice for the most part. Yeah.
and every once in a while some cloves, which I don't like, so I always take them out. Now, if it was the juice from the ones I sent you, that would be a bit more complicated because that brine juice acquires its flavor from the bacterial action of the fermentation.
Right, I know, and I guard that stuff. I dole that stuff out, you know, preciously. What I'm looking to do, the Scotsman in me can't stand the waste, and so I've got a bunch of pepperoncinis basically in jars in the fridge, and I'd like to make a salt vinegar brine, just to pour back on top of them and keep them pickled, so that I can just sort of regenerate the juice.
Yeah, but now your flavor is going to. Of the pepperoncini is going to decline over time.
Sure.
Because you're extracting it out. What I was talking about was if you take a standard pickling recipe, you'll 90% of the time see 50% vinegar, 50% water as your base. And then you add salt and your pickling spices, et cetera, for whatever it is you want to make. You heat it to a boil to extract the aromatics from your pickling spice, and then you pour it over your cucumbers or peppers and screw the lid down, and the old-fashioned way is what they call that open kettle, and the jar would seal. You put it up on the shelf and it sits for a while. What you're trying to do basically is make an instant pickle, although you could give it some extra time, but make sure you always stay at least 50% vinegar, 50% water, to cut down on to make sure the acidity is enough to prevent the bad stuff from growing.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But anyhow, that's my
suggestion. So the 1% salt brine, how does that work out in terms of measurements?
Well, for every 100 grams of water you put in, or 100 grams of liquid, you put in 1 gram of salt.
Okay. That makes perfectly good sense. I just wanted to make sure that my ciphering was solid.
Yeah. Now, the other side of it is if you're going to do a straight ferment, to be incredibly accurate when you want to make, like, a lot of pickling is done at 2.5% or 3%, you want to take the weight of your product plus the weight of your liquid and determine your salt percent on that. Normally if I'm going to do the peppers, I usually, if I'm doing it full blown, being very careful, all the rest of it, and I want a 2.5%, I'll weigh the peppers and the liquid and then add the salt based on that. If I'm being lazy, I'll just make a 3% brine and pour it over the top. A standard fermentation and pickling, can go anywhere from about 1.5% to about 5% salt, but you get much up above 5%, and it's too salty for the good bacteria to go to work.
Okay. Well, that gives me something to work with. And we're talking about white vinegar, right? I mean, is there any difference if I was to use cider vinegar, just be a little more flavorful?
If you want to use apple cider vinegar, whatever, just make sure on the side of the bottle it's reading 5%.
Okay.
Because you want to end up with a 2.5% vinegar, basically, is what you're looking for. So if you only have 2% vinegar, you don't want to add 50-50 with water, because that would bring you down to 1. So, I mean, if you only can find 2% vinegar, then just add, I don't know, what would that be, a quarter cup of water to a cup of vinegar, you should be in good shape.
Okay.
Now, you can find every once in a while pickling vinegar, which can be 7%. And if you go into a restaurant-type supply store, they sell some cleaning vinegar that's at 10%.
Oh, wow.
So you got to pay attention to what's on the label.
Yeah. makes sense. I appreciate it, Roger. I really, really do. I can't eat an entire damn jar of pepperoncinis at a sitting.
That's what refrigerators are for. You leave them in there for a bit.
Well, I know. But, you know, you have no idea the craving for the brine. It's bad.
Well,
it's bad.
If I live closer to you, when I got done with the Ají Amarillo that I'm working on right now, I'm going to have more brine than I'm going to be able to add into the ground up sauce. I'd give it to you,
break
but I
my
don't
heart.
Think it's. I don't think it's worth putting it in a box and shipping it.
No, that's too much weight and too much potential for disaster.
Yeah. But anyhow, the other thing you could do is next early fall, if there's anybody growing virtually any pepper, you could dice them all up and just put in the salt and put an airlock on the top of it and
let her go.
Instead of filling the jar up, put four or five peppers in to weight them down and a whole lot of brine and just put them on the shelf. And instead of truly making pickled peppers, be generating the pickled, you know, the brine, flavored brine.
Well, one of the things that I'd thought about doing actually was, you know, I've got these magnificent chili tapines, and they're dried, of course.
Yeah.
But I thought about, that's why I was asking about how to make a vinegar brine. I thought about just, you know, because they're very, very potent, you know, like four or five of them in one of these empty pepperoncini jars and just make a brine. Oh, it'd be special. Remember, even before I started all this, yeah, I was the broadcaster who drank hot sauce. Yeah, just have a shot every now and then.
Well, my taste buds are kind of burnt, but not that burnt.
No, I live for the salt and the hot and the tang and the just makes me happy.
Have you ever tried to just drink a teaspoon or a tablespoon of soy sauce?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
But I like the tang in there too, and the soy sauce is kind of, you know, I mean, it's rich.
Bland.
Oh no, not bland. It's rich. I mean, there's fermentation going on, but I like the hot and the tang too.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, that's my number. Unless you want me to rant on why I think rents are so high.
Because the rent's too high, right?
Well, the reason rents are too high is if I'm a landlord and I decide to invest in an apartment complex, I get to pay a wealth tax on the value of that apartment complex. It's called property taxes. But instead of doing that, I buy some stocks. I don't pay a wealth tax on the value of my stock. Now, if I invest in an apartment complex, I want to make at least the same return I could get on the stock, and I want to make enough to cover my income tax because it's not capital gains. It's a rental income, so I have to pay pretty much real income tax on it. Plus, I have to charge my tenants to cover the wealth tax I'm paying via property taxes, which simply shift the wealth tax down on the poor people that have to rent my apartment as opposed to, you know, anything else, because I'm damn sure not going to lose money by owning an apartment complex. I'm going to force my tenants to pay that wealth tax.
Yeah.
So the goddamn stock ownership people, the stock ownership people don't have to get that. So me as the landlord owner, I'm going to make sure my tenants pay that because I don't want to pay it either just because I invested in apartments as opposed to Amazon stock.
Well, let me ask it. Maybe it's a dumb question here because, you know, I'm not an economics guy, girl, whatever. If we had a robust capital gains tax, would that make this kind of dodgy behavior a little less likely?
Oh, on what's going on right now?
Yeah.
No. a transaction tax.
Uh-huh. Bingo. Bingo. I was just going to say that, Roger. You hit the nail on the head.
You know, in California, if you go buy a used car, you get to pay, most places, a 10% sales tax on that used car, even though there was a 10% sales tax paid on that car when it was purchased new. Now, if I buy $30,000 worth of Amazon stock, I do not pay any sales tax on that purchase. But if I go buy a TV set, I pay a sales tax.
Man, I'm beginning to get the idea that maybe this game is rigged. This game's rigged.
Oh, no shit.
Wait a minute. It's not that simple.
Well, I'm not saying it was totally that simple, but what I am saying is there was a transaction tax. All right, in this short trades number, theoretically, they sign a contract with somebody that owns 100 shares of GameStop. And he says, I want to borrow those 100 shares of GameStop because I'm going to sell them to a third party. Now, I will say give you back your 100 shares in 2 weeks' time. And the game is that I hope they go down in price so I get to buy a cheaper stock to give you yours back. But at the same time, if the price goes up, now I have to buy them at a higher price to give you your shares back. That is the bare minimum of what the short sales are. In the case of GameStop, there were 106%.
Can someone please mute? I can't hear Roger.
Somebody's typing.
Rick?
Okay. But what the short sellers did is they came up with contracts that were 106% of the outstanding shares of GameStop on short sale contracts, which means there weren't enough out there to even cover what they already did. And what the Reddit crowd did was they said, okay, let's really screw these folks over, and we'll buy up all the free shares of GameStop we can find, and that is going to drive the price up when they have to buy the shares to make good on the contracts. And that's what's happening right now. Now, my point is that as soon the Federal Trade Commission, as soon as they saw that 106% of a particular stock has been booked into the short sale market, they should slap a fraud on that, because there is no way in hell that they sold something that they already owned or had under contract. They were selling shit they did not own.
It's not
and
fraud.
If I come over to you and say, hey, man, I'm going to sell you a Corvette, a 1965 Corvette. Man, it's cherry, and I'm going to give it to you at this price. Now, I may hope that I can find one when you decide a month from now you want to take delivery, but if I can't do that, I've committed fraud because I've sold you something I don't have. And
it's not fraud.
These assholes that were doing the short sales committed fraud, but
Roger,
they've been able to get away with it for years.
It's not fraud.
Listen to the lawyer. He's a business lawyer. He would know.
It's not
fraud. If I sell you something I don't have.
And if I know you don't have it, yes. They knew they didn't have it. Fraud is only when you make a false statement. They told them, we don't have this. And not only is it a false statement, but if I see a contract and I see 106%, I look at that and go, you don't own all that. You can't possibly own all that because that's more than exists.
And that's not fraud.
No.
Well, I sure better learn something about fraud because it sounds to me like it is.
No,
it's not fraud.
Roger, I get what Steve's saying. Fraud, as I've said in the past, in the law, fraud is very narrowly defined.
It's hard to prove fraud.
And it must the oldie common law rule, and it's embodied in most jurisdictions, is that fraud must be proved with specificity. And that means a lot. That means you can't say, well, you know, I mean, he said he had it and he didn't have it. You have to prove it chapter and verse, line by line. Because the penalty for it is so profound from the civil standpoint. Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
It's more than that. I think there are five elements to fraud. It's one, it's a material misstatement or omission that somebody said or didn't say that the other person relied on
to their detriment.
Wait a minute. There's an intermediate element there that was, and the reliance was reasonable. If anybody read a contract that said 106% of the shares, it's not reasonable to rely on that. You clearly don't own that many shares, because it's impossible to own that many shares. And again, we're not talking common law fraud here. We're talking it's called Rule 10b-5.
Uniform Commercial Code.
No, it's not Uniform Commercial Code. No, it's rule. It's Section 10 under the Exchange Act of 1934, and Rule 10b-5 is that the SEC promulgated.
Well, I knew it was either the UCC, the SEC, or the Guacamole Act of 1917.
Well, but see, now there's another little thing that comes in here, and it wasn't just one hedge fund that was shorting the stocks. There were multiple hedge funds that were shorting the stock, and none of them pretended to have 106%.
I mean, I don't know what the contract said. What I'm saying is, and it's not on, so it's a false statement that the person who said it knew it was false at the time they said it or omitted it, that the person relied on the false statement, that the reliance on it was reasonable. Like, it's, if I went to you, Roger, and said, "Hey, I'm going to sign a contract with, or I'm going to sell you the moon," and I say to you, "Believe me, I own the moon," and you pay me for it, you can't sue me for fraud, because the court would say it's not fucking reasonable that he owned the moon. I don't care if you were dumb enough to rely on the fact that he owned the moon or the Brooklyn Bridge. That's not fraud. It's not reasonable.
That's dumbass.
That's dumbass.
That actually, what that is, and Todd pointed this out a minute ago. There's a difference between fraud and caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. And I think some of what Roger's talking about is caveat emptor, and not some sort of statutory fraud.
But the problem is caveat emptor takes the seller off the hook, because the seller can say, look, if you believed me, fuck you.
Well, that means that any hedge fund, if they fail to deliver, should be able to look at the buyer and say, well, why the fuck did you trust me? Man, that was really dumb.
Well, and they do that, Roger. They do that. When you sign a contract, to a brokerage contract, every other word is risk. The other word is loss.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you going in, you little lamb, you are going for a walk among the wolves.
Well, then why are all these people crying and pissing and moaning about there ought to be a rule that prevents us from losing
because it's the same thing as it ever was, Roger. America has socialism for the wealthy and brutal capitalism for the poor.
They got beat at their own game. That's why they want regulation.
Yeah, they got beat at their own game.
I realize
that when I go to my broker and quote-unquote haven't done it in a long time, but my 401k and that kind of shit, and I go to my financial advisor and say, okay, I'll buy 100 shares of Caterpillar Tractor. And there is a clause there that there's no guarantee we're going to be making you money. There is a chance of risk, blah, 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 blah. I understand all that. But for a business to sell short shares. And, okay, let me ask the question a little bit differently. At the present time, these hedge funds are committed to deliver more shares of GameStop than exist, which drives the price up because they want to buy them from somewhere. What happens to the hedge fund that simply doesn't deliver the shares they thought they were going to be able to deliver?
They lost money.
Well, no, that...
Roger, here's the point. Suppose you say, well, wait a minute. I relied on their representation that that they were going to be able to deliver more shares than they owned or than that were available. The court would say, wait a minute. So you knew that they didn't own them. You knew that the numbers they – and I'm not saying I like this. I'm saying this is the reason why it's not fraud.
It just is what – it's just it's
not reasonable. It's not reasonable that you said – you know, it's like the I own the moon. If I told you I own the moon and you paid me and I didn't give you the moon
– or the W.C. Fields beefsteak mine.
Right. The court would say, what kind of fucking – person would think that he owned the moon.
So I just the people who bought these short contracts, in other words, you should have known.
Yes.
You gave this money to the hedge fund, expecting that you were going to get stock. You didn't do your due diligence, and well, you're just out the money.
Particularly people who invest in hedge funds, because particularly in securities law, they also take into account the sophistication of the person purchasing.
Right, and the people purchasing in hedge funds are, tell me if I'm wrong, Steve, by definition, more amenable to risk.
Well, they go into it knowing what they're getting into. It's not like, you know, you don't see like Joe Schmo, you know, E-Trade investor who wants to put $100 in the market isn't walking in to say, hey, I really want to get on the hedge fund game. Because oftentimes also hedge funds have minimum investments.
And on top of that, you have to be a certified investor.
Not necessarily.
Most hedge funds require $50,000.
It depends on the hedge fund.
Okay. Interject. By the way, it's Kevin from K-Town. Hi, everyone.
Yeah, hey, Kevin.
I was going to say that it's one of those things where, again, they were beaten at their own game. But eventually, this stock will plummet. That's the thing, because brick-and-mortar stores, and I think this is what they're going institutionally, or whatever, brick-and-mortar stores are disappearing. It's just that these people organize to keep it afloat as long as they can. It's eventually going to fall. It's just a matter of when.
I think there's a I think there's a possibility of that. But I also think this represents an opportunity for a bit of a renaissance. Because, for instance, all markets are not the same. For instance, at least it used to be this way back when I lightly studied it. The German stock market is a lot more patient with a corporation in terms of making a profit. And so, consequently, the investors will ride a lot longer on the idea that, you know, after a while, this will be a nice little blue chipper. And we're not going to breathe down that. We're not going to breathe down the board's neck to declare, you know, declare dividends, you know, every 15 minutes and split the stock every half hour. The American market, and perhaps other, I don't know, but you know, the American market is very much like American society. It, like American society, demands instant gratification.
It's quarterly, Bob.
Well, but I understand. I understand that, but it's still instant gratification versus
I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah,
I'm agreeing with you, which is why, I mean, if you think about it, every company traded on one of the exchanges has to issue a quarterly statement. They have to give a quarterly earnings per share. They have to give a quarterly this and a quarterly that. But more importantly, like you just said, it's a cultural thing. You know, the other thing too about what is the investment horizon of a culture? Think of like the Asian cultures, Japan. That was one of the things that people always talked about, Japan. It has a much, and even in their corporate culture, right or wrong, I'm not saying which is better and which is worse. But it was they had a much longer investment horizon. Okay?
Right.
But there are other aspects too. Insider trading, for instance, in the UK is legal.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. And I will be honest with you, and I emailed you, and I don't know if you read it because I had to step away. I don't have a problem with hedge funds. I have very little problem with most things going on. My issue is, okay, fine. We're not going to have I don't have a problem with it. But if you lose, don't come fucking crying to the government to subsidize your losses.
Right. That's why I presented two cases of regulation. One, these little hedge fund babies who are now crying, Lord, Lord, when before they've resisted any kind of regulation. God knows the hedge fund managers get up every morning and spit on a picture of Elizabeth Warren.
Or worse.
And then, of course, there's down in Gainesville, Georgia, where the nitrogen line ruptured and asphyxiated burned six people to death. And of course, wait, just work with me. Let me just flesh this out. On the one hand, now the hedge funders want regulation because it affected them. If you take the same principle and apply it to that chicken finger factory in Georgia, if the CEO and the COO and the CFO and the CCO had been the ones carried dead out of the plant, their families, being wealthy, would be screaming at the Georgia legislature to make sure that no more corporate officers die needlessly in chicken finger plants. But because the people who died were deemed expendable and replaceable and Mexican, well, fuck it. You know, we'll just let it go. These things happen. Or, you know, go to West Texas. I was there many years ago now. Shortly after their ammonium nitrate fertilizer plant blew to the moon. And then we found out that it hadn't been adequately inspected since God was a baby. And we found out that Texas just really doesn't like to regulate industry because it gives the board of directors a SAD. But never mind the people who fucking die in the explosions. And so, you know, I understand what Steve's getting at. Don't cry when you lose at your own game. Don't cry when somebody shows up with a set of loaded dice and replaces your loaded dice with their loaded dice.
Well, that's the elections, gentlemen.
And the other side of it is that those hedge fund people have excused their outrageous profits for a long time, claiming that what we do is high risk, and if you have high risk, you should be able to get high returns. Well, here's a case where your high risk didn't pay off with a high return, and take some of that high return you've been bleeding out of the economy for the last 40 fucking years and pay your own goddamn bill.
Yep. Roger, you're right. It's like, hey, we're really sorry. You lost your shirt. Great. Go buy another fucking shirt. You've been making money for the past 40 years. You can go buy 100 shirts. Sucks to be you.
Now, I'm not feeling sorry for the hedge fund.
Oh, fucking A. I'm not feeling sorry for them all.
Now,
because they tell us not to feel sorry. They tell us, hey,
right.
Little guy.
I'm not sorry at all. Jump, you fuckers. Jump, you fuckers.
Your $1,200 should have lasted you 9 months. Now, the other side of this, the Reddit, my youngest boy has gotten wrapped up in this. So far, he's already made about $500 if he sells. But I have a feeling that there is going to be an incredibly coordinated sell. And there's going to be enough orders in. And when that coordinated sell comes, they're going to be snapping up and they're going to get bid again on the sells that come up, because they're going to end up having enough sell orders in to grab up anything and everything that gets put on the market that's going to more than cover their shorts, and they're going to have to pay out high value money when the sell number comes. Apparently the guy that started it bought something like $700,000 worth of GameStop to start it. And he's, I don't know, $10, $20 million now. But he started out with like a $700,000 investment, which got it to make a little bit of a jump. And then when it got spread out through Reddit, a bunch more people jumped in on it. And that's what's driven it up now to, I think, what, $200 or something?
Well, it was almost $400.
Yep, well, I don't have the computer open in front of me. Yeah. I'm not checking it.
I looked, yeah, but it was 400, 398 is what it went up to. I don't know where it is today.
Well, if I'm making serious
and shorts, I thought we were talking video games.
Yeah, well, if I may share, I doubled my money buying cannabis stock the past week.
I'm not going to lie.
From the,
Sorry. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Can you all hear me? This is Rick, the autistic veteran from the other day that was talking during the riots on the 6th.
Oh, hi, Rick.
Yeah, I remember.
I was just going to say, this is making the socialist inside of me very happy to watch the capitalist free market eat itself.
They do it sooner or later.
But the point is, that's the real kicker here.
Isn't that what Marx said, though, that eventually capitalism would eat itself?
This is not a free market. That's what's the real kicker. Putting aside that there's actually no such thing, but anyway. And like I said to Robin earlier, is I'm probably in the very small, if not the only person on the horn here. I am. And you and I have talked about this, Robin. I have kind of a libertarian streak in me.
Yeah, we're working on it, but yeah.
I don't have a problem with hedge funds generally. I look at all of these things as basically grease and oil in the machinations of the market. And perhaps it's I have a finance background, and maybe it's my finance education and background that makes me see these a much different way. And not only that, but my very first employer out of college probably makes me feel this way. And I'll give you what I mean. I worked for MCI. Of course, some of you may know what that is, and some of you may not.
WorldCom.
Sorry?
WorldCom eventually, right?
Yes, that horrible Bernie Evers. But anyway, you know, and a lot of people, if you remember the Michael Milken, the Drexel Burnham Lambert junk bond stuff. But the fact of the matter is this, is that MCI would never have gotten funding had it not been for junk bonds. So I don't have this visceral dislike of junk bonds that a lot of other people do. I mean, all a junk bond is a high-interest loan. That's all it is. It's a high-interest, very risky loan. I look at the market, and here's where I will say this. The market, the stock market, the concept of the stock market is seriously gone off the rails. It was never meant to be an investment or a way to make money out of it so much mechanism. The stock market was this. It was the way that companies who couldn't get credit borrowed money, or not borrowed money, but got capital. it was always, and whether or not this is actually the case in reality, but it was always considered the highest risk capital for an investor, because in the case of the company going belly up, you get nothing back. In any, you're not a creditor. You're not legally the company isn't legally obligated to give you anything. Whereas if you're a bondholder or you're a lender, you know, by contract, it still owes you money, the company does, and you may not, you know, in the case of the company going bankrupt, you may get very little of what you're owed, but you're going to get something usually, whereas the shareholders would get nothing. So for companies that said, look, we need money, and a bank won't give us money, we can't sell bonds because people don't know who the hell we are, so we have to, the only way we can raise money is to sell ownership in the company. That's what the stock market was originally intended to be.
And that was all well and good when the things were initial public offering type sales. But the stock market dissolved into people who bought at the initial public offering as a place for them to sell back and forth, back and forth. If I buy shares in Pacific Gas and Electric Company today, and I'll use it because, well, I'll use it just because of history. But if I buy a share of Pacific Gas and Electric Company today, Pacific Gas and Electric gets no money out of that. The person who previously owned the stock gets money out of that. And historically, stocks paid dividends, and that stock price was based on the return that you got for loaning in the IPO, the company, the money. And down the road, I have bought that savings chunk, the piece of that company. Person A buys it originally, A sells it to B, B sells it to C, C sells it to D, and I'm down here buying it from X and putting it in my portfolio that's Y. And I bought that stock because I would expect to get a 1, 2, 3, 4% return depending on what it was. And stock prices were based on the return that you would get in the form of dividends.
Not necessarily.
And since the 60s and 70s, which is where I'm going back to, the stock market has much more become, I'm going to buy this stock from the person who put it into, bought it in the IPO, and I'm buying it from them. Now, today in the stock market is, I am hoping that stock goes up in value because not very many stocks are actually paying dividends. It's all based on a greater fool theory, and how much is somebody going to pay for that stock down the road? And that's where, to me, the stock market has really run off the rails.
I don't agree with that. I think where it's run, and I don't have a – I mean, ultimately, what is a stock but a piece of ownership of a company? It's property. It's personal property. I should be able to do with my property what I want.
Hey, Steve, you'll get a kick out of this. I got a note from Arnold in PA. Steve. Libertarians are just Republicans who want to smoke pot. Fuck the hedge funds.
You know what? And you know, I've never smoked pot, and I never had the desire to. So, what does that make me? Maybe that makes me a what's the person who likes punishment?
Masochist.
Not a libertarian. Masochist.
Yeah, you heard about the sadist and the masochist's honeymoon, didn't you?
Oh, jeez. Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah,
This isn't going to be a giraffe level.
It is. It's terrible. No, the masochist, the masochist and the sadist got married, and on their honeymoon, the masochist looked at the sadist and said, hurt me. And the sadist said, no.
Groan.
I just took a drink of something. And I almost, yeah, that's a gnur.
Yeah, I know that's a gnur. I put it out there specifically that reason. Damn it, I hate it. Oh, this drives me crazy. Todd's ringing in, and I brought you guys in on the iPad because the audio is much better than on the production machine. Brother Deacon Asa and I have had tech conversations. Damn it. Well, that's really frustrating. I don't know. Hey, Sparky, can anybody bring Todd in who's friends with Todd on Skype? That would be great. And we got somebody on the stress line. Who's there?
It's me, Bob. Happy Friday to you. It's Bridges from Decatur, Georgia, talking at you yet once again. And I'm sure you've probably talked about this already, but in case you haven't, I'll reiterate it for you. Did you hear that GOP congressman, idiotic, moronic, stupid asshole over from Texas, Chip Roy?
I didn't bring that up. I'm glad you did, Reggie, because Chip Roy wants a written formal apology from AOC to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, or else he, Chip Roy of Dribbling Dick, Texas, is going to have to find other means of extracting an apology from her.
Right.
How?
I don't know. Maybe he's going to Maybe he's going to challenge her to a duel or something.
I don't think she should do it.
Oh hell no! She shouldn't do it, Reggie.
Of course not.
Apologize for what?
Because she because AOC told Ted Cruz to sit the fuck down because he almost got her murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Are you kidding, Reggie? Are you kidding me?
Oh, Reggie's on the square, man.
Jeez.
No, I'm not kidding you, man. I mean, why is it okay for us? Go ahead.
Yeah, Chip Roy of Syphilis Springs, Texas.
We're the snowflakes, remember? We're the snowflakes.
Yeah. Why do we have to apologize to them always, but they can never ever do it to us or refuse to do it to us?
I hate these people.
Well, it's not like they make it difficult or anything.
Oh my God, Bob, Robin, is it me? And I'm talking to Reggie too. Is it me?
Yeah.
I hear this shit, and I want to go. Really? You're really?
No. Really? All these years, you've heard me talking about things that make me want to eat dirt and run rabbits. I think you're finally getting the sense of what that feels like, Steve.
And to be honest with you, I basically right now have the taste of dirt in my mouth, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know what? If I were AOC, I would accept the challenge and say, well, you know, since you challenged me, it's my choice of weapons, and my weapon is an IQ test. We're both going to take an IQ test, Chipper.
If she wins, they have to leave her the fuck alone. But if she loses, she'll apologize. But if she wins, they have to leave her the fuck alone and keep her name out of their mouth, well, forever, if possible. How about that? How's that for a challenge?
I think she should challenge him to a challenge of wits, Sicilian style, a la Princess Bride.
Oh, you want some Iocane powder in there too, Rick?
Iocane powder, right.
Yeah.
But Robin, you have to admit, that's one of those things where you're not surprised, but you still can't believe it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but then again, you go, oh, Chip Roy. Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that they're busy putting together the Make AOC Apologize Caucus.
Right. but again, why is it okay for them but not for us? We have to apologize to them, but they never have to do it to us.
Because unity.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, because we have the moral high ground, and we have to preserve it.
Remember, IKIYAR.
Yeah.
All right. Chris has his hand up.
Go, Chris.
Robin.
Hey, guys. Happy Friday.
And
yeah,
to you.
I just wanted, to piggyback on that, is just to think back to Al Franken. Al Franken had to quit. Yeah. Why did he have to quit? A creepy little picture, right? And look at all this horse shit from the Republicans, you know. I mean, they call it an insurrection. You know, five people are dead. Three cops are dead because of their fucking big mouths, and it's disgusting. But I wanted to talk about Magic Mushroom Marjorie, and I wanted to.
Well, wait a minute. That's a winner.
We got to get her out of Coke Mix, too.
And her story about the Hebrew funded laser beams in space.
Yeah, because I was talking about that last night, Chris. I'm just going to jump in for a minute, and then you can go. I did see where someone asked, how did they know it was a Jewish secret laser beam in space? And I had to explain that the tip of it was cut off 6 days before launch.
Oh, that's a cowbell there. That's great.
Oh, thank you.
But I was thinking, you know, that whole story makes a lot of sense only after you've dropped about two or three hits of acid and watched.
Yeah, the Woodstock brown acid, not good acid.
That's all I had to say. I'll think of other stuff. But yeah, I like the conversation.
And a lot of the fires in California are started by God's laser beam.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, well, and lightning.
Don't forget the gays.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky hurling the aegis.
Hey, Robin, whatever happened to the gay trees?
They're still gay.
But didn't they cause any of this?
It must be the friction from the butt sex that goes onto the trees and causes the fire.
Okay. That's a cowbell and a gunner all at the same time.
I think we balance that thusly. That's what Todd calls letting the cowbell speak.
Hey, Bob, I think these guys do drugs before they go to work. I think they're all drugged up.
Oh, I think it. I mean,
if they were sober.
Huh? If you came from Chlamydia Creek, Texas, I think you'd be done before, you know, I mean, he was done before he got there.
Right. I mean, I think they all drugged up.
I wouldn't say drugs also strychnine.
Right. And I hope that she ignores these assholes, man. You know,
Reggie, she's not going to ignore them. She's not going to ignore him. She's going to play with him like a cat plays with a wounded mouse. And then she'll walk up, flick out one claw, and just.
Native New Yorkers who are from the Bronx don't play.
Yeah,
you
no.
Fuck with them, they fuck with you back. And I hope she does it to these clowns too, man.
Well, and the reason Chip Roy's so butthurt is because she's so thoroughly. You know, gutted crews.
Right. I'm surprised this guy wasn't crying when he said it. You know, like you said, he's snowflakes. You know, I thought we were supposed to be the snowflakes who cry every time somebody attacks or offends us or a little feeling.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. No, we're snowflakes when we get upset because we're watching democracy die. They're snowflakes because they cry if somebody talks meanly to them.
Right, they can't handle it. I thought these were supposed to be tough guys and women. I guess I was wrong.
I guess I was wrong. Yeah, not
wrong. They're wearing a feedum protector, right? Right, Robin?
Right, yeah. You got to have your feedum protector.
Is he up for election next year, Cruz?
Raffaelito is not up until 24.
Okay, one of them is.
Yeah, Texas doesn't have a senator up next in 22.
Oh, okay. Florida does.
Precious Princess Iwanka, Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner, is thinking about running. She's thinking about primarying Marco Rubio.
That's not going to happen. The Cuban community will back him 100%. Take it from an ex-Florida resident.
I think there's a distinct possibility. Hey, Rick has his hand up.
Yeah.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, though, that one thing I will never understand for the life of me is after the moment that riot happened, why they don't just buy one of those giant metal Cold War military document folders and every time get rid of the filibuster and every time that Mitch McConnell tries to say something, they delegate one of the squad to walk up and just play golf with his nuts with that tube after they stuff the bill in it.
It's a little harsh, Rick.
Agent Fred, Rick was only kidding.
That was metaphorical, yeah. Agent Fred. Metaphorical.
Yeah.
We work in metaphor here.
But in all honesty, though, this whole like Wall Street eating itself thing is making the socialist in me, the Star Trek socialist in me, incredibly happy. Because I'm just sitting over here like gleefully, like autistically clapping at watching these people eat themselves while they save my favorite store.
Oh, are you a big GameStop fan? Are you?
Yeah, I'm disabled, so I get my money from the VA that pays all of my bills, and so I have to keep myself occupied, and that's my main occupation. I am to computers what gearheads are to cars.
Understood.
Right. Bob, I think Crybaby Groove was attacking AOC for attacking him too. You know, he wants an apology from her too. You know, Crybaby Groove. That's what I call him.
He can shit in one hand and wait for an apology in the other and see which one fills up first.
Shit.
And I have to say though that when it comes to AOC and any of the Republicans, the reason she never challenged them to a duel is I think she has too much honor to challenge anyone to a battle of wits that's unarmed.
Well, right. That's like with the IQ test that I suggested. Joey put his hand up. Hey, Joey. Yo, Joey.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. I just didn't know if I could being heard or not.
You are.
Hey, Reggie?
Yes.
Reggie, you there?
Yes, yeah. I am. I'm here. Go ahead, man.
Were you okay with the not picking Tom Cotton? I just want to get a perspective.
Probably didn't hear it.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't vote for Republicans. Never have, and never will, man.
That's a good approach.
Well, here's the deal. They should, as far as Cruz and Roy go, they should send. She sent them on a royal cruise. How's that?
There we go. That works.
A very long and far away cruise. Far, far away, man.
But my other question is, Cruz waiting also for an apology from Donnie about all the shitty things he said about his wife?
He's never going to get that one, man.
Where's all the butthurt about that?
Never gonna get it. He's not going to get it, man. He's just not going to get it. That's wishful thinking on his part with that one. That's wishful thinking on his part with that one. You know, but like I said,
I agree with that, Reggie.
They'll never get it from him. But they should stay off of AOC's ass. Period. Leave her alone, man.
Well, and you know, Rafi Alito won't apologize because you know what's wrong. You know what's wrong with inciting an insurrection that gets the Capitol attacked and sends a horde of screaming maniacs through the Capitol trying to hang Mike Pence.
It's illegal. That's what's wrong with it.
Well, there's that, yes.
It's illegal. That's what's wrong with it. Five people were murdered. And more could have been. A whole lot more could have been. You know? Including AOC herself and Speaker Nancy Pelosi. You know?
Well, coward's gonna coward.
Whose office was broken into, and I hope they sanitized her office. Especially that desk where the guy had his nasty ass feet on. I hope they sanitized the entire Capitol. Yeah.
By the way, Reggie, congratulations. DeKalb County almost single-handedly got the last two senators elected. That was beautiful. You guys crushed it right there in DeKalb. Yeah, thank you so very much.
Thank you so very much. And I just hope we can take all the power back, but you know, one day at a time, one step at a time. We got to get all power back. That includes the Congress. We already got the White House, but we got to get the Congress, and you know, keep the Senate and wherever else Democratic, right?
You're right. We got it. And we're hanging on by our fingertips, and every senator has to be protected on our side. My God, yeah, I mean this is nerve wracking. I about, you know, I'm a pretty calm human being, and I about had a hissy the other night when I saw that Pat Leahy was in the hospital. Like, fuck, no, not already, please.
Right. I wonder, was he sick?
If I may ask.
Yeah, Kevin.
If I may ask, what kind of rules do they have for carrying firearms? Because
you can't.
Georgia.
No, that's the rule. You can't. You cannot carry a firearm into the well of the house.
Okay. Now you can, and the thing is, what Nancy Pelosi should be demanding is that they throw them out headfirst casino style if they refuse to go through the metal detector. Throw them out the damn building.
Yeah, how about a knee in the neck for like 8 minutes and 48 seconds? How's that?
Even better.
Whoops, sorry. Sorry, little Annie Oakley. We, we choked you out. Too bad.
So sad, oh well. You know, they better not try to sue them either. Because I'm afraid that's what's going to happen next if that happens to them.
You know, believe it or not, as a former worker, I'm more concerned about AOC's safety in the Capitol than I am in the streets of New York.
Yeah, because everybody her district in the squad really needs to wash their ass. Yes.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. But,
I got a good line here from Kenneth in Portland.
What?
Marjorie Taylor Greene cue ball making Richard Spencer look good since 2020.
Well, I pine for the good old days when we used to think the Tea Partiers were the, you know, the knuck and futz gang.
Right? Oh, I pine for the good old days when all the Nazis weren't in Congress.
Yeah, that would be nice too if we could go back to that.
Oh, and I just
and had they a, were just I, marching I, in Skokie.
I just had a lovely note from Dave in the Blind. I just listened to the Nicole Sandler show with the segment that you did. All I have to say is the Horn Family Community Congregation should go listen to the podcast because it was an amazing interview. And I have only one point to make: if you're going to reform the FCC, definitely send the trans girls. I hope you have a beautiful weekend, yeah. Your buddy Dave in the Blind. P.S. Christine got approval from the bankruptcy court trustee to buy her double wide that she wants, so she's getting a really nice house. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you very kindly. And Matt in San Francisco reminded us, there's nothing finer than watching an unarmed man engage in a battle of wits. And that's Chip Roy. That's Chip Roy. That's Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. That's Mo Brooks, Les Brames. You know, You got a lot of viewing opportunities for that sort of thing, Matt. Robert Australia, remember SDI, a.k.a. Star Wars? All that totally unrealistic early CGI animation? Do you know how much power you'd have to generate to fire a laser beam to Earth with enough strength to set a forest on fire? Inverse square law. The beam spreads out the further it goes. The atmosphere actually absorbed the energy of the beam and heaps up. We're talking about having nuclear generators in space, big ones. And people believe Israel has done this? Oh, dear.
Right.
Yeah.
Wasn't the Star Wars thing Ronald Reagan's idea?
Oh, yeah. That was
the Star Wars thing.
We're going to shoot the commie missiles out of the sky with our own with our own capitalist missiles, Christian capitalist missiles.
Do you know exactly how accurate you have to be in order to do that?
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, I just got what appears to be a New Yorker cartoon from Suman. Robin Hood standing at the front of the hovel. Yeah, look, I'm going to have to ask for the money back. The rich are really getting pissed off. He sounded Australian, didn't Robin Hood? Yes. But that's about it. Yeah. I mean, we hate King John and all, but goodness gracious, we can't have the rich people feeling all sad and butt hurt. It's no good for any of us. Let's see. Go, Rick.
crap. Sorry, I sometimes forget there's more than one of us here. Sorry about that. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, Rick.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Rick.
Okay, my headset for some odd reason decided to mute itself. I was going to say, on the note of the lasers and everything, one of my other little focuses is physics. Have you ever studied that in any way, shape, or form?
I have, yes. I'm an electrical engineer.
Okay, one thing I've always been fascinated with since I was about 4 years old was Einstein's unified field theory. And one of the things that they've started coming out of the interesting little tidbits I started reading about years ago is NASA thinks there may be a loophole in special relativity. Basically, the warp drive off Star Trek.
Cool.
Instead of moving the ship, which is the problem because infinite mass equals infinite energy, instead of moving the ship, you move the space. Basically, yeah.
Well, that's where and Frank Herbert was playing with the same idea in Dune with the third stage guild navigators who fold space.
Right. Yeah, and it'd basically be like putting the ship inside of a tube of toothpaste and then stepping on it. But it's only straight line distance. But it has an interesting side effect that it would kind of phase you, so technically you wouldn't have to worry about running into anything.
Right.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, that was all I had to say. I just thought you'd find that interesting.
It is interesting. And in point of fact, was it yesterday was the anniversary of the Challenger explosion?
Is that right?
I think so. Either yesterday or the day before.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was
yesterday.
That was 1986. Yes. So, 35 years ago. Hard to believe. We were enjoying a very warm day on the campus at the University of Alabama. And a buddy of mine who was from Nebraska and I were walking to class, and he had just remarked, "God, I love winter in the South," when all of a sudden people started congregating around televisions. Damnedest thing. And let's not forget, That was a corporate fuck up. That was Morton Thiokol wanting to protect its fucking share price by launching the space shuttle in cold temperatures that had never been felt before during a launch. So yeah, that. Oh, there's a reason my Robin Hood sounded Australian. Robert just let me know. He was from Tasmania. Errol Flynn was Tasmanian. I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that either, Robin. I didn't know.
Welcome to Sherwood.
Yeah. Nah, couldn't be.
Well, the fact that he was from Tasmania, I think, makes him even sexier.
Hey, darling.
Hey, darling. Yeah, some people can get away with green tights. Other people can't.
Hey, Darlene.
Yes, Steve.
That makes him quite a handsome devil.
Hey, Darlene. I heard your letter read on Malloy's show. It was great.
Oh,
nice
thank
job.
You.
Yeah, nice work I was, on that.
Thank you. I was shocked that he read it. But he did, and he had a very thoughtful three-part response to it. I didn't agree with two of his 3 points, but he made a thoughtful consideration of it, and I appreciated that. So it's kind of cool. I just wasn't expecting him to even read it because I don't think he's ever heard of me. So. That I was honored that he did that. I wanted to bring up just to kind of quickly go back to the whole stock market thing with GameStop. And please understand that I'm going to be extremely inarticulate with this because I was actually looking, trying to understand what was going on with what happened with this short sale of GameStop. And Robin, I sent you a bunch of, I think I sent you a couple of articles on it because there was something that happened with some Canadian based brokerage firms and executing firms that the SEC just basically did a slap on the wrist for, that were they were short selling for over a year and basically violated the law, and they just got a slap on the wrist and paying $1 million fine between the two firms. They wound up not even having to admit that they had engaged right. in any wrongdoing, and the SEC, and this was in December, almost a month to the day that we to what we saw here with GameStop. And of course, the SEC is protecting the identities of the hedge funds and also the three companies that were being victims of the short selling. And I guess that what troubles me about this whole thing is that's not what I recall learning in school about what the stock market was about. That's not how I was brought up, believing in the stock market as something more idealistic in the sense of helping companies thrive. And, or if they can't make it, then, you know, the competition does its job and they fade away. But it almost seems to me, and I'm still working this out in my own head, about the mechanics of it, but it seems to me the short selling flies in the face of that, and that in a sense these big hedge fund companies and brokerage firms and all of them are picking winners and losers, because one of the things that the guy that actually galvanized the average, quote unquote, and I hate that term being used, you know, the average American, I freaking can't stand it. That Meghan McCain uses it all the time, and I feel like saying you're more average than any average American out there. But I can't stand her. But anyway, you know, he was saying, and you alluded to it, Robin, where you said that, you know, GameStop has, at least with this, I think his name was Gills, and he's in Massachusetts, so he's sort of this, he's got his own YouTube channel, he's on Wall Street Bets Reddit thing, and he was the one that basically galvanized all these, the average investor into buying up the GameStop stocks and creating, you know, this huge tidal wave through the stock market. And then Robin, was it Robin Hood, tried to stop that to save the short sellers. But he had said, you know, he felt that GameStop still had some life in it. So when you're betting, when these big firms are betting on a GameStop or an AMC or whatever, and saying, you know, these stocks are going to be low, they're basically saying these companies are going to fail. And to me, I'm like, doesn't that almost make it a likelihood that they will? Because one of the things that GameStop was struggling, they were struggling to find a really good CEO. They kept trying to find a new CEO. And all of these people in Wall Street, they all talk to one another. They all know what might be damaged goods, or what they think are damaged goods. What CEO is going to take on a company like GameStop, you know, a really good CEO, when it's well known that you've got a bunch of was betting against its success? And that, and I cannot stand her, Stephanie Ruhle, freaking cannot stand that woman. But she said something today where she said, or maybe it was the other day, and she had a couple of idiots on her show as guests, one of whom equated what happened with GameStop and what the Reddit guys did and men and women did, beating the big hedge funds, the Wall Street types at their own game. He equated that to what happened on January 6th, which I thought was just vile and disgusting. But she said that the hedge funds, Wall Street, when they decide to do a short sale or short companies, people either just don't get in the way, they look away, or they get behind them. They get behind them. So there you go.
Darlene, my question is,
am I wrong on what I'm saying? There's some mechanics here, so I'm still formulating in my head, but I feel like short selling is really in contravention to what the original more idealistic notions of what a stock market was supposed to be.
Well, it certainly vitiates the notion of a free market, because it's by definition it becomes a manipulated market. And you know, I think there's another thing to add into this. And that is to look at where this came from. It came from Reddit. Okay, there's a lot of smartassery and whatnot at Reddit. But there's also a lot of conversation about gaming. And frankly, to go after, you know, if you're sitting there and look, if you're shorting a stock like GameStop, what you're saying is that you want GameStop to fail and go away.
Exactly.
And there are a lot of people who don't want GameStop to die and go away, because they have not some mere tawdry financial interest, but because they have an existential and emotional investment that no dollar amount can measure.
Precisely, including myself. I mean, I've spent tons of money through the years at GameStop for my nephews and my nieces. They love that place. They've grown up with that kind of thing. And it's like, that's exactly what that the fella there from Massachusetts, who's probably got... I'm sorry, I hear some noise.
Yeah, here. Who's the noise here? Who's the noise?
Steve. He said the same thing. He said, I didn't think this company was going to go belly up there. There was a lot more. He felt that with some new games and items and things that were coming out, he felt that GameStop still had some life left into it. And he's educating the quote unquote average investor. He's got his own YouTube channel, and again, he's a little gobsmacked. He sat back and said, "Oh, you know, I didn't want to bring this on myself." And his mother apparently said, did you do anything that was illegal or dishonest? The article, like, she got mad and he goes, "No, I didn't do anything." He's like 35 years old. He's got a young daughter, and he basically just loves to play the stock market. And they've created a community around it of other average investors. And I think it's hilarious that it is.
And you know, the other thing it is, it strikes me as a sort of organic evolutionary process. Look at the way, and it started with Howard Dean, okay, way back in the beginning of the century, when Howard Dean pioneered this idea of the $3.22 political donation. The idea being, if I can pile up small donations, I can equal the financial clout of the candidates who are getting humongous checks written by, you know, great big investment banks and GI Love Money and JP Got Rocks and the rest of the rich.
And dead Shelley Adelson, right?
Right, exactly. And dead Koch brother.
Can I say something real quick?
Well, hold on just a second, Rick. Please. Just a second, Rick. Let me finish the thought. And so this Reddit thing is kind of an extension of that. Because you've got a lot of people with a little bit of money banding together to accomplish a common goal, whether Howard Dean started it, and every Democratic candidate since has tried to leverage it. And this is,
you know, this is an extension of that, because it's a way of fighting back against the very same people. Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to join in on this, because this does pertain and is germane to what you and Darlene were talking about, and she can join in on what I have to say too. But basically, this is more than just, from my point of view, being a gamer, being about 35, 36 years old. I'm in that group that grew up with video games that have been around my entire life. That is our version of baseball. There are more people in my age demographic that play video games and watch sports. And the boomer generation has looked upon this thing as this wasted hobby and this idea of something that'll just waste people's time and money. And most of these hardcore investors have treated most of these companies, unless they can make a profit out of it, like the publishers and the big video game companies. Games like GameStop and all the stuff that all of the players actually interact with, that's just a wasted hobby for children in their eyes, because most of the people running these hedge funds are 70, 80 years old, or in at least boomers, and see video games as a waste of time that'll fade away in 10 or 11 weeks like they did back when they first came out in the 70s.
I would say, Rick, I think – I'm sorry, go ahead. I just – very quickly, I agree with you, Rick. I think it's a different – I think you're saying kind of what I'm sort of trying to get at from a very different angle. And again, it's like this whole concept, you know, again, the other side always projects. So when they sit there and say picking winners and losers, well, what the hell are they doing when they short sell?
Me being a gamer, I've been watching this GameStop thing from them slowly declining for a while now, from before this whole Reddit thing happened, because I was hoping that there would be some way to save the company, because this is a part of my childhood.
Right. And, but you know what? But could it be a self-fulfilling prophecy? That is what I'm wondering.
There's something to be said about having a game that you can hold. Not everybody has a lightning fast internet connection and can play games, you know, from the cloud.
And I collect.
So there's that element too. Right. And some people collect Blu-rays and there's that.
Right.
But, there's no need to, you know, put a dagger in them yet.
Exactly. And who's putting the exactly. And is it who is putting the dagger in? Is it really market forces and competition and a natural, you know, like going the way of the horse and buggy? Or
I can
is it
answer this question, Darlene? As I was saying about paying attention to this for a while, there are vulture capitalist hedge funds that have been buying up stock in GameStop. They've basically been trying to do everything they can within the company itself, from installing bad CEOs through the board,
yes,
to hiring people to screw up the stock, to forcing the stores to run on as little staff as possible, giving them as little help as possible to try to make them fail, and because a lot of these people have a vested interest because they've shorted the stock.
You said it beautifully, Rick. You encapsulate exactly what it probably took me 20 minutes to say. You said it. That's exactly what I think is going on. And if it's happening with GameStop, then the short selling bullshit, they're doing it to a lot of other companies that they don't like. Again, they, the masters of the universe, are picking the winners and losers.
How many good ideals?
Not normal.
How many good ideals have these vulture capitalists killed out of just greed alone?
And that's a terrific way. They're vultures. They're swirling around, ready to dive in for the you know, not for the kill, but to pick up the pieces that are left that, you know, that have already been destroyed. So I'm thinking that.
And Darlene, I have seen them kill solar stocks before solar was even cool. Way back in the day, 10 years ago, I've seen
short sale. Did they do that?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. No. Absolutely.
And honestly, from my generation's point of view, we got tired of this stuff happening and decided to kick him in the nuts for it.
Because exactly, and I hear Steve is getting all ticked off. So go ahead, Steve, because I guess you don't agree with it.
He would argue about the time of day. Go ahead.
No, is Robin there?
I am.
I'm going to adopt a new nickname here on the horn. Milton Friedman Steve.
Milton Friedman, them's fighting words.
I know, but I am.
Can't you be Thorsten Veblen instead?
No, because I don't. That guy's a weirdo.
Go ahead, Steve. You bring such an
John Maynard Keynes.
No, I'm not.
And by the way, Kevin's trying to raise his hand. He's doing it in the chat. Want to mention that to you, Robin.
No.
Thank
Kevin,
you.
Let Kevin talk. I've already talked.
Yeah. My thing is this: if you look at it in a greater perspective, if you take the 100 of the most powerful people on the planet, they're all over the age of 70. Most of them will be over the age of 70. And, you know, it's just like a sad commentary that these baby boomers are not letting go of power.
And you know what, Kevin? Just to kind of...
Why should we?
And Kevin, I don't know who said why should we, but real quick, I mean, that's
me.
Why...
A baby boomer.
Oh, sorry, Steve.
Sparky.
Elon Musk was cheering on the Reddit crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he has despised short sellers since God was a baby because they tried to screw with Tesla. And he fought back. That does not make me like Elon Musk, however, because the other day, Darlene, I saw his fantastic new idea for people who can't afford to go to Mars.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you get a free trip to Mars in exchange for your indentured servitude once you get there.
Send him. How about we send him? Hey, Elon, you go on. You scout it.
Elon, you go on. We'll send the oxygen later.
Yeah, I'm still hoping that, I don't know if they're still together, but I'm hoping Grimes knocks some sense into him because she's got a little bit of moxie and maybe can wake him the fuck up because she's supposedly an artist. But Steve, what's your issue? You're fine with short selling?
Of course. All it is the other side of the market.
It could be argued that there's a place for it.
So what? No. Wait a minute.
I've heard that argument.
Easy. Hey, one at a time, please.
Darlene, it's not betting. It's not betting on failure. It's betting that the price will go down. And so what?
I've heard that side of the argument, and there is merit to it.
But so what?
Right. Yeah, and withholding food from a hungry person isn't killing them by starvation. It's just reducing their caloric intake.
Wait a minute, Robin.
But why do you need short selling to begin
it's
with?
It's not the same thing.
If you believe in a company, buy it. If you don't buy it. Why do we even need short selling? I've often pondered that.
I don't understand what's wrong with it.
Because they're rigging the goddamn board.
They're rigging it.
Rick just said it, and I said it as well. This company was desperate to find a really good CEO. They kept trying to – they are all talking to one another, okay? They're making it so that they can't –
Wait a second. See, that's – what you're talking about is a different issue.
It's part of the same conundrum.
No.
It is. It's part of it.
Darlene. No,
I see it, Steve. I see it as being a matter of trying to manipulate the market.
Okay,
if you've got a company and you want to kill it because you think there's a dollar to be had in killing it, and then you get a whole bunch of people to join in on your idea for killing it, then short selling becomes a means of execution. It's the same thing that Bain Capital did. You know, Bishop Willard Romney would with his cronies would buy a struggling corporation that had a fighting chance and suck all the life out of it, screw the workers, dump them on the street, and say, look what a fantastically successful hedge fund Bain Capital is.
Now wait a second. That's not what Bain Capital was, and I'm not going to defend Bain Capital. Listen. Let's step back a second. Darlene, short selling is different than manipulation. Or let me say this. I don't have a problem. Here's what we have to make a decision on. When we say market manipulation, number one, what do we mean? And number two, why is it always bad? It's the same thing. It's like, and bear with me here. I know everyone's ready to throw eggs at me. It's like,
oh, don't flatter yourself. I have a brick.
Okay, well, no, it's like. The notion of discrimination, is all discrimination bad? Of course not. I discriminate on which products to buy, on whether or not to buy this, or not to buy that.
It's a verb. It's just a verb or a gerund or a noun or whatever you need it to be at the given moment. It is when you do it for improper purposes that it becomes a bad thing.
Okay, I understand that. And what I'm saying is,
I think you guys are arguing over the sword versus the hand here.
Rick, hold on.
No. What I'm saying is this. First of all, the real issue is not the market manipulation, particularly from more of a democratic which is what the GameStop thing was. It came from the bottom up. I have less of an issue with that. The issue that, and the way as Darlene, I think it was Darlene who described it, is you have these people who get together and they say, hey, we're going to short this stock and that will get built into the market price and cause it to go down. What the GameStop thing on Reddit was a monkey wrench in that. Now, what should be illegal is the collaboration of people saying, hey, we're going to do this. I mean, that's no different than an antitrust argument where you have, you know, three auto dealers saying, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make sure that this Tucker guy, remember the Tucker? We're going to shut this guy out who has things like seat belts, and we're going to shut – that's the issue.
And you know what? They're going to go ahead and they're going to do that to the Reddit people.
But
they're going to shut them down. It's okay for them to do it, Darlene, on the other side.
Darlene,
Naked short selling. That's corrupt, Steve. I don't care what the fuck you say. That is corrupt at its core, man.
What the real issue is, having rules and having them apply to everybody, or having rules and having them only apply to certain people at certain times. What Darlene described as this collaboration, that's what should be wrong and illegal. If I want to bet against the stock – wait a minute. If I want to bet against the stock and go short and think, I think this is going to go down, I don't have a problem with that. The problem lies in me – In very large institutional investors collaborating with other people to artificially push it down.
Right, but here's the problem, though. They do it with a wink, wink, nod, nod. Just like Trump did for the last fucking 4 years we had to put up with him. Okay? Wink, wink, nod, nod. Here with Reddit people, they're coming on the side of the right of trying to help this company that they love and believe in, okay? They're the ones that are probably going to wind up.
But, Darlene,
having things clamped down on them. Look how difficult it is for you had very, very expertly discussed at the beginning about fraud.
I don't have a problem with people going short. I have a problem with people collaborating to artificially collaborate and to manipulate the stock price.
If I go short
and bet on the stock price going down and I lose my shirt, great. I lose my shirt or I might gain. The issue is not going short. The issue is
getting other people.
Wait.
You're basically saying that the Reddit guys were they're the ones that should be. You're describing what they
know. I don't think so. I think what we have here, if I understand Steve correctly, is we've got a blast from the past, because what you're talking about is collusion.
Bingo. Oh, man. Okay. You know what?
It's a long-distance dedication to an orange pumpkin-colored asshole somewhere in South Florida.
Collusion. All right, well, then, Steve, let me ask you this, Steve from New York. Do you agree that the SEC needs to get some more teeth into it?
Yes.
And really go after these motherfuckers? Like, not a miserable $1 million fine, and you can't go have to admit.
Make it hurt.
I don't like James Comey, but remember what Comey said? I think it was Comey, about a lot of the attorneys in the Southern District of New York. I don't remember the specific terms, but he had a term for people who wouldn't go after people. They would take the easy cases. Stop the settlements. Go after people. Go after these funds and say you can't.
I've got one thing I'd like to ask.
Okay, go, Roger.
I got one thing. Okay, there are GameStop shops in lots of malls. Some of them are making money. They're staying open. Some of them aren't. They're trying to go online, the rest of it. As to the actual running of my local game shop store, what correlation is there between what its stock is selling for and the viability of the store in the mall?
Doesn't matter.
Okay, it doesn't matter. So all of this stock market manipulation is a separate, away from the reality of what's going on with the company. And it makes no goddamn difference. There's a casino on Wall Street that people are playing in, and what goes on in that casino has no reality to what's going on in the GameStop. Now, I'll bring in another one.
Let me finish.
I've been sitting here nice and quiet for quite some time. There was logging company called Pacific Lumber in the Redwood Forest of California, and they were on a 200-year cut plan. And it was a family-owned business, and they kind of sold off more shares of stock that – oh, God, who was the big hedge fund asshole in the late 70s, early 80s?
Milken.
Milken was not a hedge funder.
Wasn't? Okay. No.
But anyhow, somebody bought up a bunch of shares of stock and parked some in his name, some in his cousin's name, some in his aunt's and uncle's name, and all the rest of it, just below the level of doing it, having to report to anybody. Then they all got together, got on the board, dissolved the fucking company, and instead of being on a 200-year cut plan, went down to a 40-year cut plan and stole all the pension funds, all the rest of it. And the underlying value of the company got stolen. The pension funds got wiped out. Their health and welfare benefits for retirees got wiped out, totally got wiped out. The timberland was still there, and it still had value. But these people got together in the casino that was Wall Street and destroyed the company by picking it apart. In the sense of GameStop, I don't think there's much in GameStop that even if they got on the board of the directors, they could suck out, because people that have a shop in the mall basically have their inventory and they got to pay rent. So there's no underlying value. And this whole GameStop thing is a casino gameplay and has nothing to do with the underlying value of the company.
Wait a minute. Sorry. But that's – no, I don't know. Let me ask you. Does anybody know – are GameStop stores franchises, or are they all corporate owned?
I don't know the answer to that, Steve.
That's a huge issue.
Yes.
A huge issue.
Hey, guys, can I jump in? I just wanted to leave some maybe homework on this topic with the family, and that's if you want three good case studies of bad vulture capitalists acting in as bad actors, right? And just going in, destroying a firm. And when the dust settles, the entire market and industry and our sector, retail sector, is left worse off. Look at Sears. Look at Toys R Us.
Yep.
And look at a food store in the Chicago area that was decimated by a vulture capitalist firm, Dominick's. And when and you thought food deserts were bad in Chicago before Dominick's went under, ooh boy, it really got bad. It worse, way worse when that company folded. So there's three.
There's yeah, three I think if I understand what you're saying correctly, Chris, what you're suggesting is that there is an external reality that is not necessarily reflected by the constant back and forth flow of money among Wall Streeters who will never walk into a Dominick's or a Toys R Us or a Sears or a GameStop. And so again,
Mitt Romney does his evil deeds with his henchmen, and they run off into the sunset. Yeah, it's everybody's worse off except for them, of course.
And the other thing I would like to reiterate, because I think it kind of got lost in the mix, is that some of this stuff that happened on Reddit was there was definitely an element of put the screws to the big boys and make them feel like we do for a change. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. But what there also was a decidedly emotional response to seeing something that mattered to people go away. I mean, you heard Rick talking about it. It hurts. I mean, I go so far back that I remember what GameStop was called before it was GameStop. Does anybody else remember that?
No.
Babbage's.
Oh my God, yeah.
I didn't know that was the same thing.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was the same thing.
And so, you know, I go so far back that I was playing a World War II first-person fighter game, you know, an air combat game, on a 386. And it was so slow that, you know, you had limited ammo if you wanted to play fair, and you'd hit the space bar on your PC to fire, and it would go, you know, and that was the machine gun. You know,
the first machine gun went,
flight simulator on the Commodore 64. Yeah, I could take you way back, man.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so, you know, there's this emotion. And I think maybe that's what's I always look for what's getting missed. And I think that's what's getting missed in all of this is that there is a desire for a GameStop out there. I mean, shit. I miss Sears, and you're absolutely right, Chris. What Wall Street thought would be good for Wall Street or would be good for some godforsaken hedge fund turned out to be bad for the retail sector.
Right. It's picking the winners and the losers.
Artificially.
Okay. And less competition in the marketplace.
Exactly. It's artificial.
No.
Please, no. Steve, please.
Sorry.
Don't gainsay her, Steve. Let her...
It's artificial, and Steve, I appreciate. I know you're passionate about your position on this, but look, if GameStop winds up fizzling out in the natural course of whatever technological revolutions, the mall has gone the way of the dinosaur. Even though I have actually not seen, I've actually seen GameStops not in malls, but
mine isn't.
Huh?
Mine's not in a mall. It's in the Walmart shopping center.
Exactly. Neither is mine. Exactly. It's in the Target shopping center in my area. That's one thing. If they go the way of the dinosaur from the natural process of competition, but when it's premature, there's an equivalent. You know, Robin's making the equivalent. To people starving and things like that. It's like climate change, right? Man induced climate change. And it's like saying that that somehow doesn't count or that doesn't matter. To me, this is an artificial killing of of companies to our detriment. And clearly, the American people have always been ahead of their government. We've been ahead of the game. The vast majority of us, probably the 81,550,000, you know, that voted for.
Oh, you go, Darlene, you go.
You know, we can see it coming. We can see it coming. So it would have to be heavily regulated, I guess, if you want to keep. I just find naked short selling, I just find it to be in contravention to what I was taught about what the original purpose of the stock market is.
Right. And so, and the go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm done.
No, I was just going to say, and the key word there, again, art of word knowing, is market. If you imagine a real market, which Wall Street isn't, try to imagine, say, the market in ancient Tenochtitlan in 1518. It was burgeoning. It was wonderful. There were all manner of goods. Everything that that Southern North America produced was there. Whether it was maize, flowers, tapestries made of feathers and everything. And let's say, well, what we're talking about with these short selling hedge funds is essentially we're talking about Cortez. Cortez came in and said, no, Spain's going to run this now. And they disappeared that market, no matter how badly the populace needed it. Because the wealth acquisition of the Spanish crown was far more important in the worldview of somebody who had no functioning knowledge whatsoever of the day-to-day needs of ordinary people. And that's what's going on here. That's what's going on here.
Kevin has his hand raised like two hands.
Okay, go, Kevin.
Okay. How come they don't short sell oil companies? If there's any industry that needs to go out,
oil companies.
Well, they do.
For the same reason that you never see a Klansman and a cop in the same room.
Oh, wow.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
They do.
Trying to do a hammer drop on that.
It hasn't made the New York Times.
Roger,
the table.
Roger, this is Darlene. Roger, did you just say that GameStop closed at 3:25?
Yes, I did.
Wow. Okay.
Although in aftermarket, it's down to 3:19.
It's going to.
Well, better than $19. I think that's my dollars.
Yeah, because now, Cortez is going to move in and start burning some villagers' huts and teach and teach the villagers not to rise up on their hind legs and act like human beings with their fucking betters.
Wow, that's a fascinating. The analogies you're making are incredible, Robin. I appreciate that.
And let me throw
another question.
Let me throw one more thing in here.
Sorry.
What was it? I know what it is. I did see one sort of out there because you know, paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. Irrational. If you are rationally afraid people are out to get you, you are not paranoid. And this is a paranoid time. And I would simply like to put out there that Reddit is a den of a whole lot of batshit right-wingery. Okay? I don't like where I'm going. You'll just have to forgive me later. But if you wanted to make a fucking mess and say, see, Donald Trump never would have let that happen. Joe Biden doesn't understand the markets. And you can hear him hollering down in Mara Sleazo. I told him Biden would tank the markets. I told him. Are you kidding? Think about it for a minute.
That's a great point. Yeah.
This sounds like some next level Steve Bannon shit, frankly.
Yeah.
And I think I just pulled a Dr. Bill
by hauling out the axe handle at the very end of the program. But I think it's something we should think about over the course of the weekend, don't you? And Billable Rick, has his. Oh, and I need to send out thank yous. Thank you very kindly to Mark. Mark, I can't thank you enough. We are done with fundraising. We met all the challenges. Thank you so very, very much for getting us there. Thank you. I cannot thank you enough, Mark. Thank you so much. Billable, go, man.
Hey, everybody. How y'all doing?
Good.
Yeah.
Hey, Brother Rick. What's up, bro? Yeah.
Hanging out in the man cave.
Hey, how about that? Hey, the market stuff kind of went over my head, but I'm like semi-sophisticated on the markets, not really. But this whole GameStop thing has definitely piqued my interest. Those hedge funders, they're going after. There's that one family, is it like Gilman somebody or something like that? Gilman Hedge Fund, I forget what the name of it is. But I've been reading articles. Rolling Stone has had some good articles about it. And even CNN Business had some good articles about it. But I find it fascinating. This is kind of a way for the proles have basically turned on these hedge fund managers, and they're actually inflicting real damage to them. I've also read an article where, these people are betting, these small investors are betting their life savings on like short-term options. And the phrase is YOLO, you only live once, all these terms they throw out and stuff. And, I hope my son's not getting into, speculative investment. I mean, he already made one investment, as I told you about the other day in an email, Robin.
And got eaten.
I just hope he doesn't put his, student aid, up for, up on a short-term option. Because, he got burned once. I think he's smart enough not to keep going back to the well. But some people it serves as kind of a rush. It's like
Billable, absolutely. It's the same rush that comes with playing a video poker machine comes with playing on the market, comes with going to the track. To expand on that. It pisses me off. Apparently, online sports and casino betting is available in West Virginia, the last place it needs to be.
Oh, geez. Yeah,
and so, I'm constantly deluged with ads to get this particular app from this particular goddamn gambling house. And they say, up to $1,000 match with your first initial deposit, plus everybody gets a free $25 from the online casino, and they want you to bet. And I forget who it is. Maybe it's Jamie Foxx, is standing there in the water, with the fountains of Caesar's Palace behind him, or whatever the hell it is. I don't know. Maybe it's the Venetian, and he says, "You want to make your sports more enjoyable? Get some skin in the game." And in the
fan, you can join FanDuel and you can sign up and put $1.50 on the West Virginia Mountaineers basketball team.
Get your skin
in the game.
I won't do it because frankly, I don't need that. I mean, I'm a Mountaineer fan. Yeah. It's enough of a goddamn experiment in the exercise of faith just to tune in. That's my skin in the game. The precious finite time of my existence.
You have a margin call every day, Robin. I mean, why do you need to gamble, right?
They want you to bet their sports book, and then in turn, they also want you to play their online computer video game gambling machines like Luton Common. It's an Egyptian themed, I guess, spin game or whatever. And I'm going to tell you a dirty, dirty little secret.
No cowbell for that.
No, I'm going to tell you a dirty little secret.
You know whose fault that is? The gambling in West Virginia thing?
Joe Manchin.
Well, you?
Mine. Mine. I was supposed to lose. I was supposed to lose the Supreme Court argument on expanding what was then called video lottery in West Virginia. I was supposed to lose. It was supposed to be a setup. I can't stand to lose. And so I marched in, made the argument, and won the case that put stupid little no-armed bandits on every street corner in West Virginia, and that, and the next step from that was to be able to bet sports book. Sorry.
I hope you made a good beat from that, at least.
It wasn't. I don't think I even turned in a bill. I was so ashamed of myself.
Oh, you were trying to lose?
I was supposed to, but I didn't have the heart to. When it comes, you know, when you're a tomato can in a fixed fight, and you go in and you get hit in the jaw a couple of times, getting pissed off takes over, and the next thing you know, you're punching back.
Yeah, that's like me trying to like hit my driver, like instead of trying to drive to the green on a 240-yard hole, trying to like drive it into the ravine, you know? I'm not gonna do that. You know?
No, or standing at the plate. And you know, if you swing for the fence, odds are not good that you'll get there. On the other hand, right. If you stand there and you wait for your pitch and you step into it and you get good contact, sometimes it flies over the fence.
Right.
Yeah.
Precise.
Well,
hey Robin, hey, I have a question,
Chris,
quick for Steve from Georgistan. Are you still there? Steve?
Or did he leave? Chris, go ahead. No, I'm here, brother.
Hey, what can you tell the family about Precious Lindsay's boyfriend or partner, Butch, the new lawyer for Trump? do you know anything about him? He's from Georgia, right?
I think he's from South Carolina.
Carolina.
But
this will be more of a Todd question.
I did see something about him recently.
Okay.
Yeah, it turns out that during voir dire, which is jury selection, Butch once asked an African-American potential juror a question that can only be defined as real fucking racist.
Yeah,
who's surprised? I don't have it immediately to hand, but maybe I'll find it.
I'm not going to ponder what that question could have entailed.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Robin.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the QAnon shaman that wants to testify?
Absolutely, because that's just freaking rich. I heard your message earlier today, and it was like, QAnon shaman Ted Nugent cosplay boy now wants to be a witness for the prosecution in Trump's impeachment trial.
And Lady G is against it because it'll become a circus.
If he's against it, I'm for it. I think that would be great to have some of these assholes who's come testify, you know? And also some of the Republicans.
Donnie made me do it.
Yeah, exactly. There I was in Arizona just polishing my buffalo horns, but then Donnie made me come and come to D.C. and attack the Capitol and engage in an insurrection and permanently make myself a fixture in the history of American stupidity. That's me. Yep.
Well, you know that phrase, dark horse, in this case he's a white horse.
Has anybody seen the Frontline thing that was on the other night?
No, I didn't, Sparky.
American Carnage. Oh, it was good. That will be a historical documentary forever.
Thanks for mentioning that,
cool.
Sparky.
Weekend viewing.
It's Frontline? That's really good.
Yeah, you can watch it online. I mean, you just register with whatever your
cool
local public television station is, and they'll let you watch it.
Anybody wrap their heads around the reason that the Republicans don't want any testimony at this trial is that if the dam cracks and people start singing, that all the people that were involved in it, i.e. the congresspeople giving tours, the head of the Defense Department, the new Secretary of the Army, and all the rest of them are going to get tied up in the conspiracy that did in fact exist by getting the Proud Boys to come in from the opposite side of the Capitol than the crowd from the rally. And the Proud Boys are the ones that had the earpieces and were leading the breaking down of the barricades and all the rest of it, and tying the Proud Boys into the folks that were saying that the National Guard can't show up and they can't be issued helmets, mm-hmm. and the D.C. National Guard can't get help from anybody else, and all those
Mike
restrictions
brother,
that were put
right,
on
Roger?
Them.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
Mike
just
Flynn's
saying
brother.
That if, if testimony starts coming out, the entire goddamn
House of Cards collapses.
Yeah, that's why they don't want to talk about it. Yeah, you're right, Roger. I don't think so. I have to disagree, Robin.
Yes. Everyone, I just wanted to say before I forget, I just wanted to say my cat Spock wants me to tell you all he says hi. He keeps pawing at the headset.
Live long and prosper, Spook.
Yeah. I'm going to have to disagree because these people get voted in anyway.
They can't get voted in from prison, and that's the thing. Testimony given in this impeachment trial is it's not criminal in nature, but you know, people who testify about other people can provide perhaps sufficient evidence to bring criminal charges on the behalf of the federal government. Listen, we've gone a little bit over time because this has been a rousing conversation. I mean, it's been a Jim Dandy, y'all. They all are, and I thank you so much for it. I'm gonna knock off and do the upload here. It's my birthday weekend, so naturally we're looking at shit weather on my birthday.
Hey, happy birthday to you, Robin.
Thank you. It's a big one. It's not like a number with a zero behind it or anything, but it's a big one. You know, since New Year's Eve.
Saturday or Sunday. So are you planning some major kind of like thing if the weather permitting?
I might get gussied up and go out and take some pictures or something, but I don't think the weather's going to cooperate. I ordered my first little black dress.
Oh, congratulations.
And it arrived from Old Navy dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn it.
Dirty?
Yeah, it's like they wiped the warehouse floor with it and stuffed it in a shipping bag and sent it.
I'll put black and dirty.
Too many voices at one time. One at a time, please.
How can black be dirty?
when you wipe it across the warehouse floor and the warehouse floor has brown dirt on it, that's how billable.
Yeah exactly. If you're a woman, you know that. Yeah, brown.
Black shows every other color up.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the line of Old Navy. Honestly, I really did. The dirty line. I honestly did.
Hey, Robin?
Yeah?
This is Steve. I just want to make sure. I hope I didn't disqualify myself from being an usher at the Cathedral of Common Sense tonight.
Oh, no, not at all. You're fine. Nobody's taking your carnation.
Nobody's taking
your carnation away, Steve.
Steve, we need you as a really sensible, you're a really good counterbalance because you get us to think of things in a different light and different angles. But
who wants us to have a queen, Darlene? Maybe you could be queen.
I've been called that.
Queen of America. Yeah.
I'm already the queen.
I know, but he's got the queen. He's got the Queen of England. But just really quick, Robin, I was asking what I was really driving at was whether or not you were going to be doing some grilling.
Nah, the weather's not going to cooperate for that. There's not a prayer. I don't think I could be out there long enough for a grilled cheese sandwich. Honest to God, I don't. I'm living for slightly warmer weather and slightly bluer skies, but... I was looking forward to an opportunity to get all gussied up and cute. And, well, okay, as cute as I can be.
I pulled off 2 dozen oysters last night.
Oh!
Roger. Damn it, Roger. Why do you do this to us?
Oh, that would be... Now, see, that would be my kind of a birthday celebration. You know, just a big tray of 2 dozen oysters on the half shell.
Oh!
Oh, and I forget the... Is it...
And then garlic butter.
Oh!
I love it's like a vinaigrette, but it's like got finely minced shallots, and I had one down in Alabama, minced shallots and chopped up satsumas, which is a kind of like tangerine that's really sweet and creamy, and cider vinegar, and tarragon, and I love that on oysters. It's better than cocktail sauce by a mile. But
my wife, when we can get them, does a fresh mango.
Ooh, man. Yeah,
Roger,
that would be...
stop it.
Stop it.
Why? I enjoy it.
Stop it, Spock. Stop it. No,
I mean, my God, it's like, how do
you... Oh, that's wonderful. I'm not
opening up a restaurant.
No. The fact is that the youngest boy works in the meat seafood department at the local Safeway. And they had some oysters that were reaching the end of their shelf life. So 2 dozen oysters I got for $5.
Oh, man, cowbell for $5 oysters.
That's awesome.
I'm all over that.
But that was two dozen. Yeah. 2 dozen for $5.
That's incredible.
This is not fair. This is just not fair.
Okay. That's like a little over 20 cents an oyster, isn't it? I'm just ciphering on the fly, but yeah.
I'm not an oyster fan, but the quality of the food and everything that Roger talks about, it's not fair. Nobody should be okay.
Says the guy who can go to Zabar's anytime he wants to. You know, please suffer quietly, Steve.
Okay.
And just really quick to Steve from Georgia, Stan, I'm going to try to order from the crab place.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it. Yeah, because you're just going to hurt me. Yeah.
I want to try. I'm going to order some scallops. I've been like hankering for some scallops. So that's my next big order.
Were you okay with the soft shells?
Oh, my God. I loved them. The soft shells. I love them. The crab cakes.
They're good, solid people, man.
If you ever have a problem,
you have a problem, call them. They make it right. You know,
they do.
They
actually followed up with me on an email. They said, sure. What did you think of the food? And I said, everything was great. I did say that the crab cakes had some shells in them. And they replied, and they said, we're going to talk to quality control and deal with that. So it was, like, totally fine. So now I'm going to try their scallops. And then I'm going to work my way up, hopefully, to the raw oysters.
Nice. They've always treated me well. Always.
Yeah, so that's the next thing I'm looking forward to doing. Yeah, and I'm getting better at cooking soft shell crabs on my own. So, you know, like managing that process, I did much better with the second batch.
Oh, and I do have to give credit where credit's due. Old Navy customer service was really good, and now my dirty little black dress is free. So, you know, that much was nice. Maybe, you know, and it's machine washable. Yay.
Good job. You're all set then.
Yes. You know, I'm not going to be walked on even if my dress was. And I finally found some cheap, cute shoes to go with it, so I'm all excited.
Oh, that's nice. Congratulations.
Robin, isn't there a song about that? A dirty black dress? She walked around with a dirty black dress or something like that?
No, that's Dirty White Boys, Chris.
Oh, okay.
Bye, Steve.
Oh, you guys, this is
blue dress on.
Yeah, that's another one. I don't have one of those yet, but I got some cute little shoes. They're round, they're suede, fake suede, round toed with a little wedge that I can manage and a cute little ankle strap. So yay, I'm excited, just because, and I don't know. Maybe this evening, Agnes will want to watch. And I'll like cover my face or put on a blindfold or something. Maybe even smoke a cigarette with the blindfold when we watch the interview with Nicole. It was actually a very nice time. But thanks, all of y'all. Got to get out of here. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. Really, really, really. And thank you so much for the kindness and the and your determination to see this network, this program, remain alive and kicking. Thank you. I cannot thank you enough. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening. Thanks to Ralphs, and thanks to Jenny in Wisconsin, and thanks to thanks to Mark. Thank you so very much. We made it to the end of January in good form. Thank you. And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky at the seat of honor around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Yeah, like Matt in San Francisco, I think I would. I'd pay money to see the Shaman testify in full full costume. That would be rich. It would be, but only if Lady G is next to him in a hoop skirt and cotillion gown. Sorry. No, we don't want to see a man in a dress, do we? No, we do not. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Do please continue to heal and get well and get your mobility back. And all, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe, y'all. Please stay home if you can, if you have to be out and about, and a lot of us do. Take every precaution available to you. Learn how to double mask. Wash your hands frequently. Don't touch your face. Wear nitrile gloves if you can find them. Use hand sanitizer, even on the gloves. Keep your social distance 15 feet or more between people wearing masks, and at least a continent between you and whoever isn't. And if somebody comes towards you saying, "I want that AOC to apologize to poor Ted Cruz," avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend. See ya.